Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3.
afternoon. It is 1 o'clock on October 31st, 2011. This is a meeting of the House Finance Committee Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And this afternoon, we are providing an opportunity for both the state and the public to weigh in on an issue related to a proposed real estate license fee increase. I've called the hearing essentially to offer this opportunity because many of us here today and other legislators have received overwhelming comments from the public on this issue. So we took it upon ourselves to have this hearing and offer this opportunity, again, for both the state to provide some facts to us and also for the public to comment on your comments on the proposed fee increase. Again, I'm Representative Mia Costello. Here with me today is Representative Bill Stoltz, who's co-chair of House Finance, Representative Bob Lynn, who chairs the House State Affairs Committee and is very interested in this issue. Also, we have with us Representative Pete Peterson and Representative Wes Keller. In Juneau, we are being joined via teleconference with Representative Kathy Munoz. Kathy, are you online? Okay, well, perhaps we'll hear from her, but I know she's in Juneau, and we are linked via teleconference there. Before we get started, I did want to turn it over for a moment to Representative Bob Lynn.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'd like to, first of all, thank you for calling this hearing today. It's very important and very timely. But I do find it necessary to put on the record that I am, in fact, a currently licensed associate real estate broker in the state of Alaska. I'm currently on referral status, affiliated with Prudential Vista Real Estate here in Anchorage. And I got my real estate license first in California in 1976 as a salesperson, later as a broker. When I came up to Alaska, one of the first things I did was get my license here. So I'm currently on referral status. Since I was first elected in 2002, I've not made any referrals. Actually, since then, nor do I have any plan. And glad you're on this hearing today. This 149% proposed increase could just put a lot of people out of business. And if I go on just a couple more comments before we get started.
Sure.
Okay. I don't know how many people, a lot of people don't realize how much it costs to actually be engaged in the real estate business. It's not cheap. Somebody here decides they want to be a licensee, a realtor, it's going to cost about $450 to take the pre-licensing class. The state test is going to take $100 to take the test. If you have to go back and take it again, it's going to cost another fee. Not sure what that is. Post-licensing every year, that's about $500. You have to submit your license, $50. Multiple listing fee, about $70 a month. You have gasoline for your car to drive people all over town, someone out of town, and it goes on and on and on. A lot of people in real estate make an awful lot of money, but a lot more people don't. It's like you can have some famous actors and musicians, they make a whole bunch of money, but a lot of other ones barely scrape by. So this is very, very important that we get to the bottom of what's happening here, try to do something about it. If left the way it is right now, the way it's proposed, we could put people out of business, and I consider it anti-business, especially anti-small business. So thank you again for offering us an opportunity here today.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. We've also been joined by Representative Chris Tuck. And I did want to mention for those people who are here today and also listening online that we are taking public testimony. If you're interested in testifying, please feel free to sign in. And we are hoping that the hearing will end at 4 o'clock. So I'm not going to be timing comments because I wanted to give people a chance to air your concerns. However, just keep in mind that if a lot of people are testifying, that keeping it around 3 minutes will help us meet that 4 o'clock time frame that we're looking at. I'd also like to recognize that in the audience we have Deputy Commissioner Curtis Thayer, who's here representing the department. We certainly appreciate you coming. And also I'd like to call to the table the director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, Don Habiger.
Yes.
Also, we are joined by Senator Bill Wilikowski. Thank you for coming.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Don Habiger, and I'm Director of the Corporations Business and Professional Licensing, a division of the Department of Commerce. Bear with me a moment while I just kind of organize my own notes and paperwork.
Well, we're waiting for you to straighten up your papers. I was wondering if Representative Munoz can hear us in Juneau, and if you would let us know. All right. Representative Munoz, at any time you wanted to mention that you're there, I just wanted to verify that you're hooked up and listening in. So with that, Mr. Habiger, please feel free to go ahead when you're ready.
Very good. Thank you. Again, for the record, my name is Don Habiger, and I'm a Division Director for Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. I'd like to take a few minutes, if I might, talk to you generally about what we do, the programs we serve. And we serve essentially three entities, if you will, for the state, or we have three main branches of our program. We register corporations, any entity that wishes to organize themselves as a corporation, have to make that registration through our department or our division. And we have about 60,000 active entities in the state of Alaska. Secondly, we license the state businesses. Statute requires that any business or group that wants to perform business in the state has to do so under a license, and we provide that service to our business community. We have about 60,000 business licenses in the state. And lastly, we have a licensing of professionals. And right now we have about 55,000 professionals that have to secure a license if they wish to practice their particular profession in the state. We further divide that down into several programs. We have 40 programs, round numbers, for the state. 20 of them are controlled by boards, if you will. They are sanctioned through statute to administer their programs, to kind of set the standards, to approve licenses. And then the other 20 programs are programs that the division does that activity. So we set the standards following state statute. And the other thing I want to mention as far as the things that we do, for the most part, we are a support for our boards. And again, I should concentrate on the 20 boards. We're support for the boards. Again, they do the licensing. They kind of control their industry, if you will. They set those standards. They set the regulations that support their statutes. We support them. We will get them space, for example. We will take care of their records. We will keep the files. We will issue the license. Oftentimes, they themselves, as a board, will say, these candidates get those licenses. They give us that direction, and we do the paperwork, if you will. So in that regard, for those 20 programs that require boards, we are administrative. Part of that role in administrating is setting fees. And obviously, that's a big subject matter for today, and I'll go into much more detail on that. But before I do that, I also wanted to talk about another thing that the division does. We have an investigative unit, and that investigative unit is sanctioned under 08-01-087. And I wanted to spend a little bit of time about pointing that out. And I'm going to quote from that section of statute: the department may, upon its own motion, conduct investigations to determine whether a person has violated a provision of this chapter or a regulation adopted under it. And I'll use that as a springboard a little bit later on in the presentation. But I did want to put that marker. The division does have an investigative unit. Right now we have about 18 members in that investigative unit. Some of them are dedicated to various professionals. For example, the medical board has in statute a couple of investigators that solely administer investigations for that board. Others, however, do not. We provide the service, and if they are used for a particular investigation, then they positively record that time for that investigation. If you're following along on your on the PowerPoint that's left in hard copy, page 3. So we've gone through the process of making a proposal, and that proposal has led to what I consider a robust discussion on fee increases. So the remainder of at least my time here before you, members of the committee, is to talk about the robust discussion. I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things that we did as a division leading up to this robust discussion. One of the things that we do periodically, in fact, for our state it's biennial, is we renew licenses. And so that's really what started this process. It just so happens that at the end of this year, in December, and going on into January, we have 10 professions that have to renew their licenses. In other words, everybody that holds a license for real estate, for example, must renew them, in this case, by January 31st. So that starts the process. There's another piece of that process that we have to follow, and that's encapsulated in 08-01-065. And again, I'm going to take a moment to read a portion of that statute. It's the fee-setting statute that we are required to follow. It says, the department shall establish fees levels under A of this section so that the total amount of fees collected for an occupation approximately equals the actual regulatory cost for the occupation. The department shall annually review each fee level to determine whether the regulatory costs of each occupation are approximately equal to fees collected related to that occupation. So that is what I consider kind of the main body of 065. It asks us to look at the costs of running the program, to fairly judge those costs, and then to find a fee that covers those costs. And we did this. I also want to talk about another element that led to this particular another element that we had to seriously consider, and that was the legislative audit piece. In 2011, we underwent a special audit. It looked at a number of our processes, and those processes included our fee-setting policy. And there was a couple of recommendations that came out as a result of that audit. I believe they came out late summer, so they're relatively new. I want to highlight two of those pieces. And it says in the audit that the DCPL director, myself, should ensure occupational licensings are adjusted annually in accordance with state law, and also to improve the method for allocating indirect costs for tracking occupation direct cost. I want to take those a little bit and just kind of describe those processes, if I might. One of the things that they pointed out, I should say Ledge Audit pointed out, one thing that we weren't doing as well as we could have or should have, is doing an annual analysis. We had gotten into the practice as a division of doing an analysis, certainly on a biennial time frame. We also kind of drew our schedules of revenue and expenses and gave those to the boards. But the actual analysis, a more robust, if you will, analysis of the revenues and expense for each board was not done as timely as statute requires. We are changing that. We are doing these annually. The second piece of that is indirect costs. And I wanted to take just a moment to talk about that piece.
Excuse me, Mr. Habiger, just for those people listening online, I wanted to mention that we've been joined by Representative Faircloth about 15 minutes ago. Thank you.
Thank you. The second thing that was noted is indirect costs, and I just wanted to bring the committee up to date on that piece of it. There's a certain amount of our activity that goes into a general cost pool. My time, for example, as I direct all programs, goes into that cost pool. Travel that I might do in support of the program goes into that. Our telephones, for example, go into that. Just those hardwires, those lines, anything of that nature. Anything that cannot specifically be given to a board tends to fall into that pool. One of the things that the audit pointed out, but also one of the things that I noticed since the beginning of my tenure, and by the way, I've been with the division a little over a year, but we realized that the division was not allocating that cost pool fairly. One of the things that was happening is professional licenses were picking up more than their fair share, quite frankly. And one of the things that we had to do is look at that. We had to go through an analysis piece, and we used our administrative service division to help us with that. And it just so had, well, after the analysis, we realized just a bit under 16% was accruing to the professional licenses that has been redirected. It now that 16% of the general cost pool or indirect costs as our licensees see it on their revenue and expense sheet now goes to where it belongs, business licensing. So, again, I'm just bringing that to your attention. It is some of the things that we are doing in response to legislative audit. The other thing that I want to talk about, and again, we're on page 4, if you're following on your sheet there. The other thing I want to talk about is just a timeline. And I wanted to really kind of lay out for you the things that we are dealing with as we deal with these robust discussions. Some of the things that we have to consider as we set a fee and trying to get ahead of that curve is these timelines. Number one is we're required by statute to let our licensees know 30 days prior to the expiration of their license that they are due for renewal. So 30 days right there. The second thing is when a proposed regulation goes out, we have a 30 days comment period. So that's 60 days from the deadline for renewal. We have generally 30 days of processing, and that might be our time as a division to read all the comments that we have. It would be the process of Department of Law that might have a draft regulation to get it to the format where it goes over to the Lieutenant Governor's office. Any of those processes we try to allow 30 days for. And then lastly, once it goes over to the Lieutenant Governor, if the Lieutenant Governor signs off on a proposed regulation, then there's a 30 days before it becomes effective. So that's about 120 days that it takes us to get a regulation, particularly a fee regulation, through. Right now, we're at the beginning, very end of October, November, so That's why you saw these regulations come out when you did. We were a little bit behind our time frame because we were responding, if you will, to some of the issues that were brought out by Ledge Audit. So those are the things that we went through. Those were the deliberations that we did in setting that. And then finally, I want to talk about the formula, if you will. In the late 90s, the division went through a process of formalizing, if you will, its analysis formula. And essentially what they described as the process was to look back at two fiscal years of revenues and expenses, determine what those were. In this case, we chose to wait till FY11 was completely closed. We used actual revenues and expenses for the various professions, in this case 10 professions, and we used that to basically look at the actual numbers for the last two fiscal years. And then from there, it is more or less a simple division problem. You look at the revenues, you look at the expenses, you look at the number of licensees that generally is reported to us from the annual reports by the boards, and it becomes more or less a division problem. So that's kind of the process we went through heading up to the proposed regulation and, again, our robust discussion. Want to now take a little bit of time to look at what we can
see. Mr. Habiger, I just wanted to interrupt you to mention that we've been joined by Representative Mike Hawker. And Representative Hawker, you're welcome to join us at the table. I know you've been following this issue for many years now. So, okay. Mr. Habiger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This next section is just to look at some of the what the cost elements that led to this robust discussion. The first thing I wanted to look at is just personal services costs. And I've kind of simplified this, or maybe even oversimplified this, for sake of discussion. But you have in front of you on page 5, I believe it is, a number of positions that are assigned directly to the Real Estate Commission. You have an executive administrator for that board, and the FY12 costs.
I think Mr. Habiger just gave me an idea, and I don't think you can oversimplify too much. You know, if you were sitting here in the executive branch, hypothetically, and the governor said, Mr. Habiger, how did we get here? And you got 3-4 minutes to explain it in shorthand. Could you do that and then explain it? I don't know, that might, the simple answer is sometimes more helpful and then elaborating, but not to jump on your prerogative.
Mr. Habiger, are you up for the challenge?
Just if you had a hypothetical meeting in the past, you might want to rehash.
We will try that challenge if I understood the direction. Madam Chair, very simply, we looked at the positions that are directly connected with the Real Estate Commission. We have listed 4 of those. And essentially, the total of those 4 positions is $376,000 to cover that. Those numbers come from the detailed report in the FY12 governor's budget. They haven't changed. So very simply, those are the numbers. Now, it's a little more complex than that. We have, as I mentioned, a positive timekeeping. One of the things that we have seen spike, if you will, is complaints from the public about real estate transactions, and I'll go into more detail a little bit later on that. But even though we have an investigator kind of assigned to real estate issues, there may be a need, as the volume increases, to have more than one investigator covering that activity. And in fact, that has happened. And so if an investigator that normally works on something else has to get involved in a real estate case, an investigation, then their time will be positively kept, and that time will be charged back to the Real Estate Commission. In fact, We have about 10, 11 positions that did work in FY11 and FY10 to support the Real Estate Commission. But generally, we have those four full-time positions.
So if you were to respond directly to what the primary reason for the increase, it's the rise in investigative activity, essentially.
That's correct. And actually, I have FY10 actual costs on that piece of paper, so that was $283,000. FY10 actuals for personal services was $392,000. Some of the other 11 positions is a number of those are investigators. Some of them are administrative support staff. For example, filing clerks, if they take some time to just do filing, or retrieval of archives, for example, because it's needed for an investigation, they keep track of their time, and as they spend it on Real Estate Commission, game guides, any of the boards, any of the programs, and they positively mark that timesheet.
Representative Faircloth?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a follow-up question. If investigations are going up, is there a trend that we're receiving more complaints, or is it that the single complaints are requiring additional hours? And is that consistent with another criteria that you're using, such as home sales, or why are we investigating more? Do we have a bad actor that's causing problems, or is there an actual growth in comparison to the total housing market?
Through the chair, Representative Faircloth, I'm not sure I understand what are the drivers in the investigations. I noticed, I don't have it easily at my hands, but I did notice as I looked at about 10 years of investigator cases, that the numbers seem to crescendo seem to gradually increase and then kind of crescendo in FY10, and then they were back down. Just to put that in perspective, I don't know why FY10, but it was, as I remember, about 130 cases, and then it was down to, I think, 80 cases or so complaints that we received in FY11. I don't know what's driving that.
Madam Chair, I just would like to have that information. One, not necessarily, I think we need both. We need to know what you're doing inside of the investigative process, but my question was specific, the relationship with home sales and complaints, and is that on a steady trajectory, or is it somehow an anomaly in 2010? And if it's an anomaly, do we know why it's an anomaly? And when I asked the question, whether it was a bad actor, some people in the room shook their heads, yes. And so what I'd like to know, or a follow-up, would be in at least FY10, did we have a repeat offender inside the caseload that your investigators were working on?
I might be able to, through the chair, Representative Faircloth, I might be able to answer that in part.
Mr. Habiger, and also just to follow up on that question, I'm interested in knowing the results of the investigation. So, for example, of the cases that you investigate, do you find some sort of transgression has occurred or not? And so are we running after a few bad apples, or is there some issue that maybe there's an issue out there that we can address through some other means? Information about the nature of the investigations, I think, would be helpful. If you have that now or could provide that to us.
I'll have to work on that one, Madam Chair. Representative Faircloth, if I might, I won't forget your question, but if I could kind of go into the investigative piece first, part of that will be answered there.
I also wanted to mention that listening in are Representatives Dan Sadler, Representative Paul Seaton, Representative Scott Kawasaki, and also Representative Kathy Munoz is again in Juneau with an audience there.
The next part of I talked about personnel costs. That is essentially 60% of our overall budget, and those costs are similar for our various boards, and in this case, personnel cost is a fairly large component of the expenses for the Real Estate Commission. Next is investigations. I want to take a little bit of time of talking about what we have seen recently. And again, Representative Fairclough, I won't forget your question, but I want to go through the process. Just talk about, first of all, an investigation. What are the components in that of that piece? First of all, a public member can call the division and or at least notify us, email, whatever, that they felt that there might have been a violation of a particular transaction or a licensee. So we get notified. We consider that an intake. In the past, we did not keep track of intakes the way we are today. We've been keeping track of intakes for about a year now. And an intake is nothing more than a public member, a board member notifying us of a potential issue. We feel it's important to keep track at this level when in past we have not. An intake does not become a complaint until we take the time as a investigative unit to get back a formal or some questions. It is formal paperwork. If the complainant takes the time to put something in writing, it is something that now becomes, we gain more information. It can become actionable, and so now we consider it a complaint. So once we have that, we have enough information in which our investigators can begin looking at the question, can begin conducting interviews, if you will, even to find out if we have jurisdiction, to find out if there's enough of a complaint or an issue that might be a violation. Those complaints can take quite a bit of time. And at some point in time, a complaint can even be taken to a board member and asked, is this something that we need to investigate? Because we're not the experts in a particular profession. They are. If they say that a complaint does need investigation or it has merit, then it could go into the next phase, which is an investigation. A complaint might gather quite a bit of information, but an investigation is actually looking into the violation of a particular chapter of Title VIII, whether it's Real Estate Commission, whether it's medical, any of those statutes and regulations. And then finally, an investigation will lead to a formal action. The formal action has a wide variety of tools. From a consent agreement, let's say that we bring in a licensee and we say we believe this has been the case. We might talk to them and show them what we have. And a consent agreement is merely a tool for a licensee to come into compliance. There might be some things like remedial education. There might be some things like peer review involved in the consent agreement. There might even be some financial pain, if you will, through fines, that kind of thing. But, of course, that's all set by boards. For example, some boards have matrices. If there are certain kinds of violations, we can go to that matrices, and we can see that the board recommends this suite of options, including a window of fines. So that's how the boards control that activity, and that's how we gain compliance for our licensees. Again, our major goal in investigations is compliance with statutes and regulations.
Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Madam Chair. Under your legal services, and this is all stuff that's being contractual services, does the department use the Department of Law, and then when the Department of Law is filled up, then they go contractually, or do they always do their investigations under, or their legal services under contract?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, that's the next page. So we'll get there. Before you, and for the probably listening audience, we do have FY 10 and 11 contractual service as we see them. Legal services are $150,000, $160,000, depending upon which year you're looking at. Hearing and mediation, that is a formal process that is using the Office of Administrative Hearing. That essentially is what it costs us to pay for those services in those 2 years. Expert witnesses is a process where, again, we're not the professionals. At times, we have to, through contracts, secure services from professionals. It may not be a board member. The reason why we don't always use board members is because they have that judicial service part of their, I guess, of their being. But anyhow, they're going to sit in judgment on these particular actions. And because of that, we don't want to color their perceptions before they judge the case. And then lastly, just transcripts and records. So next page, and going back to Representative Tuck, legal services is the biggest portion of those cost drivers. And yes, that is with Department of Law. Every time we need legal advice for any of these cases, how to gather evidence, how to present a case, how to negotiate a consent agreement, for example, that is with the Department of Law. The next largest piece of the pie is the hearings, and that's through Administrative Office of Administrative Hearings. And essentially, there are our judge sets, if you will, and if we don't fashion a consent agreement that is acceptable, if somebody wants their hearing due process, then they may request that, and then we will take that particular case through the hearing process. They may represent themselves. They may hire their own counsel. We use the Department of Law to help us present our case or our side of the argument before that judge. So we're paying for their time to render a decision. And then lastly, a very small pieces of the contractual service or that section is transcripts, and then a very other, small percent of that total contractual service, and that might be anything. It might be a contract to do a exit survey. We've done that with some other boards, for example. How was your licensing experience? That would show up in that other category. But by and large, it is investigative.
Mr. Habiger, is there any effort to proactively go after a solution through mediation versus allowing it to go through the more expensive route through the legal process?
Mediation is always considered. There are a number of times when the administrative judge will ask if we want to go through mediation. There are a number of times that the parties have agreed it might be in the best interest, and I believe that's an option that's always on the table. And I promise to get back to Representative Fairclough's question, and this might help. One of the things we have recently seen is that there was a particularly difficult case, and I don't have all the figures in front of me, but I was just looking at this in the last couple of days, and this is an FY11 case, and just looking at the cost to the Real Estate Commission on this particular one, it was about $35,000. Just for the Department of Law. What I haven't been able to, or I didn't at least do yet, is look at what that case has now cost us on the administrative hearing size. That represents about 250 hours of the Department of Law's time. And If that were a small board, that $35,000, as we have seen, and let me take an aside, if you will, our smallest board, which is midwives, has, I'm somewhat going off the cuff here, I believe it's 39 licensees. And since we go back to our licensing statute where they pay for those costs, that's a pretty substantial cost that they would have to pick up. A larger board, on the other hand, gets to spread that cost out amongst more licensees, and so they wouldn't see as large of a hit. So, Representative Faircloth, I don't know if that answered your question, but it was the example that came to mind as I was listening to the question.
Madam Chair, that did not.
Representative Costello and Juno, I have a question.
Could you please identify yourself first?
I'm sorry. This is Representative Munoz and Juno. I have a question.
Thank you, Representative Munoz, for calling in. I've been calling out for you, and I'm glad you're talking, because I wanted to make sure that you could hear us and that we could also hear you, because I know you have several individuals in Juno who are wishing to testify. So please go ahead.
Thank you. In regard to the testimony that was just given, I was wondering if there's a breakdown, a differentiation between traditional real estate transactions and those complaints that are brought to the commission based on property management issues.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I don't have that information at this point in time, but we can get it back to the committee with that information.
Thank you. And also, when you get to a point in your agenda, we do have people here in Juneau to testify.
Thank you.
Then I'll try to be brief, Madam Chair, on just the last items that you may have heard about as your constituency has communicated with you. One of those pieces is the recovery fund. There is a recovery fund. Essentially, that's a fund set up in statute where licensees pay a biennial fee. When they renew their license, when I came on board, it was 55. The commission has recommended a fee increase to that to 125. That particular regulation fee adjustment is not complete, so it's still in the proposal stage. But that essentially fills a fund so that if there is misconduct, and that misconduct is kind of proved, if you will, then a member of the public can go and get some kind of recompense for those damages. So you might hear about that. Yes, that fee is going up if the draft proposal gets all the way through the process. Currently, it has gone through the public comment period. It is right now housed with law on the final format and revision, if there are any, and then we hope that goes to the Lieutenant Governor in the very near future.
Excuse me, Mr. Habiger. We've also been joined by Representative Max Grunberg, and I wanted to ask if you know the amount that's currently sitting in the recovery fund.
Madam Chair, I don't. We can get that information to you.
Thank you.
And then just some other things that you may have heard about, and I just wanted to quickly touch upon. There is confidentiality from the investigative process. Certainly there are reasons for that. Confidentiality is needed to protect the licensee as well as the complainant. And there are times when a commission member may want more information about a particular investigation, and if the investigation is not ripe for them to get that information, we quite frankly will say there's not much we can tell you. And that really is to protect all the parties involved in the issue. So I wanted to alert you of that. Again, recently, 84 public requests to look at potential real estate violations this year. That number isn't as high as I've already mentioned the previous year, but it is still represents a fairly high workload. Some of our smaller professions might get one or two or three a year. Some of those smaller ones, for example, one investigator might work three or four or five or six professions. Not in the real estate's case. We have a real estate investigator that is committed full time to that. And then lastly, last year we had 56 cases closed, and 28 of them led to disciplinary action. And that was, as I said, some form of consent agreement, some kind of hearing process, some kind of formal action by the commission itself. So, in summary, Madam Chair and committee members, we've kind of looked at the numbers, FY10. We have about $800,000 in revenue. The way we look at it, there's about $1.3 million in expenses. And currently the licensing fee is $275. We think that's inadequate to kind of capture that delta there, if you will. And we are committed to looking for solutions on how we move forward with this issue.
Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. How long did it take you to go through an analysis process to make your recommendations to move fees up, your annual review, just in a global?
In this case, it through the chair, Representative Faircloth, in this case, it probably took a couple of months. And again, we were dealing with some issues in response to ledge audit and trying to nail down what we felt were the right numbers, moving costs that traditionally had been given to professionals back to where they belong. It took quite a while.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative Faircloth.
Then would you make a recommendation to the state that we, if it's taking 3 months to do a review, that that might not be a good use of your time annually, or are you considering adding more staff to be able to keep up with the auditing proposal and the recommendations?
Through the chair, Representative Faircloth, I hope to put this time period behind me where we're kind of plowing new ground, if you will. As I mentioned, the legislative audit, and in fact, many audits prior to my coming had repetitive issues. We hope to tackle those repetitive issues. Fees is one of those. And once we get a system that we can count on, that our boards and commissions have confidence in, we hope it to be a very quick kind of analysis.
Madam Chair, and finally, if I might.
Representative Faircloth.
In evaluating this particular licensing structure, how much weight was given to the 2010 shortfall?
Representative Faircloth, Ashley, the proposed fee includes that shortfall. So the weight was given to that. Our analysis indicated that there was approximately a $150,000 deficit ending FY11, and that covers that deficit.
Madam Chairman, I just in contemplating that, so the licensees are going to get hit double. They're paying back then from a previous year into a future year, and then we're going to make that a recommendation for the following year. And if we hold that at the following year, then you're going to be over-collecting for 2012, if the trajectory that you said was an anomaly in 2010. I'm just wondering why we're not trying to balance it out and choose the right fee versus and collect that over time versus grabbing it all in a two-year cycle and then trying to next year, if the same issue got brought up, trying to substantiate that again next year for the numbers.
through the chair, Representative Fairclough, I would agree that the system, as I understand it, does lead to peaks and valleys in fees. As I read and understand and have looked at some of the legislative intent over 065, that's the fee collecting section in our centralized statute, I'm not sure I know how to get around that one.
Are there any other questions of legislators online or here in Anchorage?
Representative Costello, this is Kathy Munoz down in Juneau again. If we could get follow-up information on the investigations that pertain to property managers versus real estate licensees, I would appreciate having that analysis.
Thank you, Representative Munoz. I think if you could write a category for some of the questions, one of them is the nature of the investigations, and I think that Mr. Habiger has promised that he will get back to the members with some more information about the nature of the investigation. So thank you. And now Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you, Don, for your information. I assume you're the one that actually makes the decisions as far as whether or not an investigation moves forward or not. I heard you, what you said, you go back to the board and get their input, to know, to find out. But somebody has to call the shots. I guess what I was wondering, just in general terms, these boards, the commission, they know the tie, and that's part of their consideration. The fiscal impact on the license is part of their a factor that is right there in the consideration of whether or not legal fees are contracted to investigate that kind of thing. I'm just trying to figure out who does the authorization and if there's a tie there to the in their minds to the price of the license.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I would say that process hasn't been as transparent in the past as I hope to make it in the future. Now, certainly, if a public member does call and complain and have an issue, there is a certain part of a process that the commission or a board may not know about as we gather the beginning of the information. I would not expect to use a board member's or a commission member's time at that time. As I understand the intent of the legislature, you want these things investigated. So there's a certain amount of activity that is happening that is a normal course of business, if you will, to protect the public. However, if something does arise that looks like it needs commission involvement or board involvement, there is a process that we hope to, it's already happening, but we want to make sure that the commissions and the boards are happy with that service, that they get communicated, but we have to choose a board member because once we give them the details of an investigation, if you will, they cannot sit in judgment on that particular case. So sometimes that impacts in the small boards, just quorums and things like that. So it's always a bit of a balancing act, but we hope to make that a little more transparent as we can, given those confidentiality issues.
Just a quick follow-up.
Representative Keller.
Thank you. Thanks for making that, working on making that more transparent. I can see a potential there, of course, for frivolous investigations and maybe investigations for the wrong reason if it isn't all transparent. So thank you for your making that priority.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wanted to go back to the huge increase in cases in 2010. And someone had mentioned that there might have been one particular person who was responsible for quite a few of the cases that year. And if that happens to be true, is there any way that we could consider increasing the fine for a person for a bad actor, so to speak, so that would more come closer to covering some of the costs of these investigations?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, as I understand, as I read statute and understand the program, we are limited by a civil fine as it's placed in statute. There is a ceiling. We don't have the ability at this point in time to change those kinds of things. We can certainly fine less, but we can't go over. As I understand it, we do not recoup costs based on investigations, and currently that seems to be borne by the licensees. Madam Chair, can I? There was a question asked, and I do have the information. It has to do with the balance of the surety fund. Currently, it's $212,000, and well, $212,200 at 8/31.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said that a minute ago you don't have the ability to recoup costs in investigations if you find somebody's violated the law. Did I hear you right or mishear you?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we do not recoup costs like that. We can fine. The fine goes to the general fund, but we do not assume a case is $35,000, and we do not go after that. That's correct.
Obviously, if I may continue, obviously the money would go into the general fund. That's not my question. My question is the amount you can recover. There is no provision in the law to allow you to recoup the costs.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we believe that there is a $5,000 cap on civil fines, and that's what we use. We do not try to recoup any other costs.
Do you have any idea how much that you're losing as a result of that inability?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, all I can do is go back to what we consider investigative costs, and that's somewhere in the neighborhood of $200,000 for the Real Estate Commission for FY11, for example. I would assume you could say that all of this has to do with investigations in its infancy.
Do you have any recommendations you could make either to this committee or members of it or the legislature as to whether you think a legislative change in that area or any other area is warranted?
We've now been joined by Deputy Commissioner Curtis Thayer. And Mr. Thayer, if you could address that question in terms of, I think one of the outcomes we would like to see is there a better way? Is there a smarter way? Is there a way to level some of the fluctuations that we see? And to that, and if you could answer Representative Grunberg's question, that would be helpful.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. Excuse me. At this time, that is something that we are looking at, but it again, right now is not in statute and is not something that we can publicly discuss as we're in deliberative and confidential stage within the governor's office on legislation.
May I follow up, please?
Representative Grunberg.
When would you be prepared to make that recommendation, if any, in writing to the legislature or members of the committee or members of the legislature individually?
We're still in deliberative processes, but I think as we've had conversations with Representative Costello, that is a topic that I think we were all open to, whether it would come from the administration or whether it come from the legislature. It possibly could be a solution to this. One thing I might note is we do actually have a board where the fines they collect actually goes back into their association as opposed to going back into the general fund, and we're making that change too, where more of the funds that are collected go back into the general fund, and then if it's the will of the legislature to redirect those to help offset investigations, that would be one way to lower the cost.
Let me follow up a little more. Did you talk at all about the audit?
We skimmed over it, but we did not speak specifically. I think Mr. Habiger spoke to two of the recommendations that came out of the audit.
Okay, because as you know, in the audit, the LB&A found that about $500,000 was being charged to professions, where it shouldn't have been charged to those professions. And presumably here you may have another $200,000 that should be borne by the offenders rather than the innocent members of the profession. That's $700,000 there. Now, I'm not saying it's all due to real estate, but I would appreciate it if we could get some kind of recommendations by the beginning of the session on how this could be addressed so the right people are paying it and the innocent people are not.
Yeah, I might comment on one of the legislative audits, or on a couple of them, we looked at investigations to make sure that our investigations unit, what they're doing and how they're doing their work. We actually went out with a contractor who is actually a retired special agent in charge of the FBI, living here in Alaska, used to run internal investigations for the FBI, counterintelligence in Afghanistan for a while. But he looked at our investigations unit, and he gave Don and I recommendations on Friday of 16 ways to improve investigations and tweak investigations. Nothing was a glaring red flag, but clearly there were ways of collecting fines, issuing citations, and ways that we could do things better or differently. And so we're going through those evaluations, or going through that those 16 recommendations, and determining which ones we can implement in a short period of time to get through all 16, because it was a snapshot of investigations that, quite frankly, we don't believe has ever been done.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Thayer, I think those recommendations would be quite interesting. Are any of them going to result in less cost for the license holders?
I think the one thing is there's going to be more efficiency within investigations, and that in itself is going to reduce the cost. You know, not only of how we intake and how we handle investigations, but also how we collect the fees and possibly issue citations out into the field. You know, a lot of the mechanisms are there. It's just a matter of implementing them. So I think through that we will see costs go down. By how much, it's too early to tell.
Again, I think that what we're hoping to gain out of this is get the facts on the table and put our minds together and find out if there's a better way that we can be carrying through with, you know, the responsibilities of the state while making Alaska friendly to business. And with that, I did want to thank Mr. Habiger and Mr. Thayer for coming today. I know you made a special trip, and it's very valuable to have you here in person and to have your time, and also for those people who will be testifying, I'm sure they will appreciate having you here also. With that, I wanted to mention, if there are any questions from members online or in person, Mr. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just real quick, it would be helpful, too. I know the department's been looking back 10 years and looking at the cases and everything. If you can give us some trends and let us know what the fee structures were over the past 10 years and let us know how many licensees there were during that time period as well, would be helpful, along with the other information about the nature of the investigations and everything else. So thank you, Madam Chair.
And if you could provide that information to my office, I'd be happy to share it with those who are interested. Are there any members online who have any final questions for Mr. Thayer or Mr. Habiger? Okay. Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
It's my intention now to find out if there's anyone here in Anchorage or online who is facing a time constraint and would like to testify, and perhaps you have something else that you need to attend to this afternoon. So everyone, okay. If you could come forward, please, sir. After we have one person testify in Anchorage, my intention then is to go to Juneau. And Representative Munoz, are you still there?
I am.
If you
and
don't
we
mind,
do have Errol Champion here that would like to make
here
a statement.
If you would go ahead and introduce those people in Juneau, and we'll go ahead and take the Juneau testifiers next.
Thank you.
Sir, if you could state your name and address for the record, that's the standard way of testifying in a committee. We appreciate you coming.
Golly. My name is Jerry Rice. I'm from Anchorage. Apologize for my voice. I've got a radiation treatment a little bit later this afternoon, which will be my last for 7 weeks of chemo and radiation therapy. But I felt that I needed to come down here and push my raspy-sounding voice at you just to share some information. I've had the privilege of being a real estate broker in this state for over 25 years. I'm the past president of the Alaska Association of Realtors. I worked as a consultant and a trainer in 46 states and 5 countries and have closed transactions, over 1,200 transactions, and run the largest training company in the state and have for 20 years. And I just wanted to, because I'm a little bit weak, I brought some materials, and I don't know if I can hand them out or not, but some of the questions that were asked earlier relative to the number of licensees over the course of the last 10 years, I've got a spreadsheet that outlines all of that. And I brought 8 copies. Didn't know if it would be appropriate to push that thing around or not.
Absolutely. We'll take the copies, and my staff person will also make copies available for others who are interested.
I know I've got only 3 minutes, so I'm going to talk as fast as I can. I had sent a letter to the governor that addressed a number of the issues relative to the issues that are before you today. And really, you know, in a big picture, kind of a 3-minute overview, the challenge that we have from the perspective of setting these fees, while the legislative audit was alluded to, one of the primary elements in the legislative audit was pointed out was an underreporting of the income that was being generated by the various boards and commissions. And in the case of the real estate industry, it didn't take me 60 days to do an analysis. I took the fee structures that we pay, various elements of the fees that we have to write checks for, put them on a spreadsheet in that handout as well, and showed that the real estate industry has been overpaying by about $300,000 a year for the last 20 years. We have overpaid over $3 million to pay for our professional services, which are not being accredited in the analysis and in the setting of these fees. The second handout the front page shows that the schedule of revenue and the understatements over the course of the last 4 years reflect that typically we're paying between $300,000 and $400,000. And just in doing the analysis over the last 4 years alone, the surplus that should be available to this industry to pay for some of these outrageous fees that have resulted as a result of a bad actor. But the bad actor was not a real estate person. The bad actor was an investigative officer who was opening up investigations ridiculously so, and that information is contained in here. But the overcharge of the income and the growth in looking at the open investigations over the last couple of years, while we haven't received that information based on the testimony that was already given, the information of the cost of those investigations is a matter of public record. And the cost of investigations went from $69,000 in 06 to $81,000 in 07, $96,000 in 08. And as the problem occurred when the investigative officer was thrown out of doing investigations in the Real Estate Commission and reassigned, but continued to decide whether investigations were occurring or not, drove an increase based on that hostility to $132,000 in investigations in 2009, $279,000 in fiscal year 10, and $345,000 in investigative costs in fiscal year 11. That's not one investigator. One investigator doesn't cost us $346,000. A person who is deciding to open investigations for frivolous reasons is what has driven the cost to this industry to outrageous figures that are absolutely not sustainable. $120,000 for investigative services, more than adequate. In one case, the new investigative officer with no credentials whatsoever opened over 25 investigations for the lapse of a real estate license alone. That's ridiculous. That's like calling a SWAT team out when somebody has a parking ticket on their car. And the uncontrolled decisions by people who have no concern about the cost is what's driven these fees outrageously. And we need some oversight to make sure that we don't arbitrarily go to some commission member and decide whether to go forward on an investigation, but deliver a systematic approach that will enable the Real Estate Commission to gain a handle on these outrageous fees. The head of the Real Estate Executive Director is more than adequate to sit down with two
investigative or with two commission members and decide whether a course, a case needs to be investigated or not. We need to bring some reality back to people who are opening up investigations for job security and pulling in attorneys and expert witnesses every time they choose to harass somebody whose viewpoint is inconsistent with their belief system. This has gotten to the point of being ridiculous. The other thing that I think, and I know I'm pushing up against my 3 minutes, so I'm getting ready to walk away because I don't want to get in trouble here. I had a letter to the governor that talked about the impact of what this outrageous fee increase should be. Based on what we just heard relative to the surety fund and what is the real estate commission's next job is to define what the surety fund fees are. What's happened, however, is the surety fund has been replaced with what's called a recovery fund. It used to be a consumer could file a $250 filing fee, and if I told them that the roof was bad and I knew the roof was good and it was going to cost $10,000 to fix the roof, then the surety fund would then, if it showed that I had intentionally misrepresented that roof, they would pay for that roof, and I would have to repay the surety fund. The surety fund has been changed to a recovery fund. A consumer now seeking recourse in that same situation would have to take me to court. They would have to prevail in court. They would have to win a judgment against me, and then they would have to make a diligent effort to try to collect that money from me. And only then could they file for reimbursement, and then the licensee would have to repay that. So the costs and the amount of surety fund payouts on the second page of my handout will show you that over the course of the last 3 years, the average surety fund payout on an annual basis is $17,000. Once we changed it from a surety fund to recovery fund, last year's payout was $5,000. We have currently, as was just stated, $200,000 in the surety fund fee. To increase now the surety fund renewal at $125 per licensee with 2,000 licensees as a baseline will increase the surety fund fee by another $250,000. Added to the $200,000 that is already in the fund, we're looking at 50 years of surety fund reserves, if not another nickel was collected over the next 25 years. And that fund can be replenished every 2 years, so there is ridiculously more money in there than we need. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Get nuked.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate you coming today, especially hopefully you'll get better soon. And if Mr. Thayer and Mr. Haviger could come back to the stand, we have a question from Representative Faircloth for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at a document that you produced on 10/7/2001, and it speaks to some of the testimony that we just received. It shows the real estate commission. It shows a schedule of revenues and expenditures, and so I was intrigued when Mr. Rice was saying that the industry itself has overpaid or subsidized $1 million worth of revenues inside the state. Are the numbers that you show that you've provided to the legislative body the beginning cumulative surpluses, the ending cumulative surpluses, are those carried forward? You paint a totally different picture that they ran through their money, at least when I look at this chart. Or does all this money roll into the general fund, never to be seen again? So I just want to understand your charts.
Which one are you looking at?
October 7th, Department of Commerce, from the director. Page 2, and it's showing me just what Mr. Rice was talking about. But it's a totally different picture.
This is something we can do.
Madam Chair, the bottom line question is, are the numbers represented on this form rolled into the general fund and they restart each year, or is this chart representing an accumulative balance that is totally different than the previous testimony that this committee just received?
Through the chair, Representative Faircloth.
you allow through, I believe, it's the operating budget, the ability to roll forward, if you will, surpluses and deficits. And so that's reflected in this. Now, the revenue is the revenue as defined by statute and regulation. Each of the professions does have a series of fees that we can charge. The fees in general is in statute. The fees in particular are in regulation. And if it is a fee defined by, for example, $100 for a license for whatever profession, we will keep track of that, and that's reflected here.
Madam Chair, if I might follow up.
Representative Faircloth.
Madam Chair, so that we can continue with public testimony, if the department could try to reconcile what Mr. Rice has just provided us, which is a contrary statement to what you've just said as far as the investments over at least the last 10 years, even if we could have a five-year analysis. But I'd like to see something because the information that's been provided to this committee shows that there's an accumulative balance of a negative number, and so that's different than what the last testifier said.
Representative Faircloth, to the chair, if we could have Mr. Rice's document, we'd be more than glad to look at it and do a side-by-side comparison, but we don't have access to that, nor have we seen it prior to today.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Representative Munoz? Are you there, Representative Munoz?
This is her aide, Christopher Clark. She just had to step out, and we have here in Juneau, Errol Champion, ready to testify, Madam Chair.
We're having trouble hearing you in Juneau, so I'm going to go to Representative Grunberg for a question and then go back to Juneau.
Thank you. Through the chair, to the folks from the administration who just testified, Representative Faircloth asked for an explanation of the differences in the chart. I'd like to go beyond that. The testimony that Mr. Rice gave was different than your testimony in a number of other respects also. I would appreciate it, and ask the chair's permission, for you to review carefully through a record of the hearing today his statements and any discrepancies between them and the facts as you know them. I would like you to address. His information was packed with facts and allegations. I'd like you to address them, and I would like, if Mr. Rice or folks are still here on his behalf, if he would like to amplify what he was saying, where it differs with what the administration says also, so we can get really honed in on the difference in the facts as each of you has presented them today.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. And also just with a note that, again, we're trying to find a better way to do things, a way that makes sense, perhaps look at how other states handle these types of problems. And so I think we're all driving in the same direction, I hope. So with that, Representative Munoz.
Hello, this is Christopher Clark. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. If you can speak up, please, and say your name.
This is Christopher Clark, aide to Representative Munoz. Here in Juneau, we have Errol Champion with the Southeast Board of Realtors, the incoming president. Is it okay if we have him come up to the mic and testify?
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Chairman Costello and members of the House Finance Committee, thank you for the chance to testify. My name is Errol Champion, and I am associate broker at Coldwell Banker Race Realty, also the incoming president-elect of the Southeast Alaska Board of Realtors. For the past month, Alaska's real estate licensees have been following the exchange of information between the Division of Business and Professional Licensing and the Alaska Real Estate Commission regarding these proposed increases in the biannual fee. Generally speaking, the Department of Commerce states this significant adjustment is required because of language in Alaska Statute 0.8, of which you've all been referred to. It requires the Department of Commerce to annually review the regulatory costs and adjust these fees accordingly. It's hard to believe that if the department had been following the statute on an annual basis and reviewing the costs, this proposed increase can be justified solely because of 1 year's increase in regulatory activity. There are dozens of questions that come to the minds of all of us in this industry over this proposed increase. In the interest of keeping my testimony brief, here are four questions I'd like to ask the Department of Commerce, DPPL. What were the results of the last 4 years of audits? Have they been shared with anyone? I have not been aware of this dramatic increase occurring in just the last 12 calendar months. Are there meeting minutes with the Alaska Real Estate Commission summarizing the presentation of these audit results? Have they gone to the Alaska Real Estate Commission to justify and forewarn them of this tremendous shortfall that has just occurred? Has the Alaska Real Estate Commission been kept informed at each of their scheduled meetings of the regulatory activity regarding the filing of new and the disposition of old complaints? And finally, number four, is the Alaska Real Estate Commission been given the opportunity to review the annual regulatory costs and activities, at least as an informational item, as part of the ongoing requirements in the execution of their duties as members of the commission? In my opinion, the Department of Commerce is working at way too fast a pace. They are becoming a manager by reaction rather than a management team by leading. I hope the biannual fee increase can be reduced to an amount that can be supported by the majority of Alaska's 2,400 business professionals with Alaska real estate licenses. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Errol, for your testimony. Is Mimi Rothschild in Juneau?
She's here.
With that, I think we'll move now to Anchorage, and I will start with Ron Day. Is Ron available? Okay. Deborah Murphy? Okay. Kevin Cross?
Thank you. My name is Kevin Cross, brokered out of Keller Williams. I'm 2012 president of the Anchorage Board of Realtors, director on the State Board of Realtors.
Kevin, could you also give your address for the record? That's essentially what we do. And
yeah, my home address?
Yes, please.
Yes, 1131 Winners Circle, W-I-N-N-E-R-S, Anchorage, Alaska, 99518. Excellent. Jerry did a spectacular job. He took the wind out of my sails quite a bit, but you know, what I want to express here is that there's a unique approach. One is that the department says they're not sure what caused an increase in investigations. Obviously, there's allegations that perhaps it's on the investigatory side. I will tell you that whenever there's trials or tribulations, particularly in a real estate market, there's a lot more emotion and frustration. Okay, it's obvious that the real estate market that we've now basically recovering out of over the last 2 years, you know, a lot of sellers were very frustrated that the equity was not there that they eagerly anticipated. Buyers are obviously looking at the market as being larger opportunities. And whenever more emotions flare and there's changes or someone's cheese is moved, there's obviously going to see an increase. My interpretation is that's why investigations are now down. When the market stabilizes, these things take care of themselves. There's ebbs and flows. That said, and I can just state this on a market point, I'm not going to make any allegations as to whether there's investigatory misconduct because I have no evidence of such. I will tell you that a dramatic increase such as that is not only extremely burdensome on your standard realtor as far as with the increase in costs across the board, but I have a team. I have six employees. I pay this fee. So this increase on me is rather substantial, okay, not just per individuals. I have everybody on my staff is required to be a licensed realtor. Why? Because it's very important to me that I have high-quality, trained professionals working for me. Okay, so couple that with the effect that costs across the board have gone up. Health insurance has doubled this year for the health insurance I provide for my team. Continuing education, everything that goes into the business is a massive burden. 250%, I mean, is massive. You know, it's obvious when you look at the investigations, the number, there's a hole in the bucket. The answer is not to just keep pouring more water in it. I mean, let's look at some of our options as far as seeing where those expenses are, and I think we all agree that, listen, the perpetrators and these individuals who have caused an increase in investigation should be the ones who are rightfully paying for this shortage. Okay? There's a dangerous trend, it seems to be going, that the law-abiding citizen and the individual out there working their butt off is the one paying for the mistakes of a few. This has got to end, and I encourage you to stand up or at least change what is currently seems to be the practice of $5,000 for a claim for an individual, and I know some of these claims and these individuals cost individuals hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm sure this individual went right back to work and probably has a very profitable business, maybe even something somewhat real estate related, because he only had to pay $5,000. I mean, serious. So, you know, I appreciate you allowing me the time to testify here. And believe me that I have a lot of respect for you, and I just appreciate the time you've given us to speak our minds. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate your testimony. Is Catherine Langman Clark here? Would you like to testify?
Hi, I'm Catherine Langman Clark. My address is 16905 East Plumley Road in Palmer, Alaska. I've been licensed. I took my test 20 years ago, I think this month. And I have been in the business a very long time. I have been extremely active. I have been a past president of the State Association of Realtors. I've been twice past president of the Valley Board of Realtors, so I have been extremely active in the real estate community. I've been following what's going on. I did not get a letter in as I had wished to, and today I am testifying because I didn't get that letter in, and I'm testifying more on a personal note as to what this is going to do to me, because in the past year and a half, I've had to put my, I'm very nervous. Real estate license on hold because of personal reasons in taking care of parents that are aged and having problems. And so my career right now is on hold. And a license fee increase like this, and it's not just on this particular license fee because we're also looking at increases with the, I understand the surety fund has been changed to a recovery fund, so we're looking at an increase there. We've also got increases on several other fronts. Thank you. In the real estate business. So in this case, when we start looking at all of these increases, someone in my position who right now is putting my career on hold but yet still paying all these fees and I have no income right now because I am taking care of parents, you folks are going to be putting me out of business if you do such a dramatic increase. And that being said, there's other people, I'm sure, that are in my position also who have their licenses in referral because they're in that kind of a position. I chose not to put mine in referral because I keep hoping that I'm going to get everything into play so I can get right back into business as quickly as possible. And you're going to be putting them out of business also. That being said, you take a look at it, licensees dropping out of the business, that's going to be less income back into here. So, yes, you've increased the fees dramatically, but you're going to drop the licensees down. So, again, thank you for the time to allow me to speak my mind. Thank you.
Catherine, thank you for testifying today. We appreciate it. Are there any questions? Great. Thank you. Next, here in Anchorage, Todd Held, and then after Todd, we will go to Fairbanks. I know there's some people waiting in Fairbanks to testify. Todd, available?
Thank you very much for allowing me to speak today. My name is Todd Held. My address is 8843 Boom, B-O-O-M, OOM Circle, Anchorage, 99502. I'm an associate broker with Prudential Jack White Vista Real Estate here in town. I am licensed now for about 10 years in this industry. I am a second-generation realtor, so I do have some other experiences not as a licensee. I got to watch my mother conduct business for many years. Before I was licensed, I also did manage my own properties, so I had a little different view from that also. In all of the emails that have been passed around, the testimony, the talk in the offices and other places about what's going on, there's a lot of information, and as it's been pointed out, with the information that Jerry Royce provided, and then the testimony that was given here today, we are not clear on what is fact and what is not. The only thing we do know that may become fact is the fact that our fees are going to be increased dramatically. It's been presented by Mr. Royce that there was an investigator who cost a lot of money to somebody, and it's going to get passed on to us, the licensees, eventually, it sounds like. But in the emails that have been sent out and the letters that have been sent out by the state, it seems like everything goes back to the investigative services are not being handled properly. It really, to me, sounds like we have investigators that are taking anything, the intake, as he called it, and passing it on to the legal services. They're passing the buck. And that's a huge expense, as we can all see on the chart that was provided. I feel that there's just a knee-jerk reaction to all of this. 3 months seems like a long time to come up with this number. Again, as Mr. Royce put it, he came up with it pretty quick, and it doesn't add up. In the teleconference that I had the pleasure of listening to last week, I heard that pretty soon a decision is going to be made and there's not going to be much more input, and the weight of what we say won't be given to that decision. And I found that to be a little bit disturbing. Someone's going to make a decision for me and they're not going to look at the actual facts. And I would ask that that not be the case. However you go about it, please take a look at all of the facts and the facts alone to come up with a decision. Whatever the decision is, as long as it's fair and equitable, I personally am okay with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate your testimony. Now I'd like to go to Fairbanks. Are there people waiting in Fairbanks to testify?
Yes, Madam Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes. Is David Summers available?
This is David Summers, Chairman Costello, and committee members. Thank you for the chance to testify today. Again, my name is David Summers. I reside at 751 Eaton Boulevard, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99709. And I come to you in opposition to the increase in license fees proposed by the division. I am a 27-year real estate broker in Fairbanks. I represent the Alaska Association of Realtors as their industry issues chair, so I've been following this quite closely. And I can offer some insight as a former real estate commissioner, as I just finished serving 9 years early this year. And the first item I'd like to discuss is the accounting by the division when it comes to real estate commission monies. I can tell you for those 9 years, most of those years that I served in the commission, we were extremely concerned about the budget numbers that were presented to us, who was preparing those numbers, how the expenses were being allocated. The real estate commission for many years asked for, pleaded for, more access and input to the budget, and the ability to at least have access to how the costs were being allocated. Without that control of the costs, or at least the input, the numbers are going to be flawed. Recently there's been a move from the division for improvements, and we applaud this, but the system is still too flawed to be able to rely on any of the numbers we're seeing. The legislative audit confirms our concerns. It is completely unreasonable to see where the division needs an additional $1 million to run the Real Estate Commission through an additional cycle. The $1 million, I quote, is arrived at by taking 2,450 real estate licensees, which was the last number I saw, multiplying it by the proposed increase, and it hits just over $1 million. I just don't understand why they're looking for those kind of numbers. If the costs were that high, even if the costs were that high, something would be horribly broken. I reference other states. I hate to do comparisons to other states, usually with Alaska, but if you look at a couple other states that have similar sized licensees or a similar number of licensees, you can look at Idaho, where every 2 years they charge $160, Montana, where they charge just over $170 every 2 years, North Dakota, $200 every 2 years, and I would submit that we owe it to the citizens of Alaska to, if not do better, do at least as well as these other states. And I fear that we're going to lose many of those licensees employed as assistants. You heard somebody speak earlier to this topic. Not everybody just pays for one licensee. In the case we heard earlier, that person pays for, I believe, seven. But quite a few people pay for one or two or three licensees. Those people are going to lose their jobs. Many of these people won't be able to support that many licensees. We'll lose many licensees who do not earn enough to cover the increase in fees, along with all the other required fees, such as continuing education, among other costs. And you have to remember, we have underserved areas around the state with no or few licensees. This new fee structure will make the problem worse. I can tell you that I have to go out to many areas around the state that have no licensees to take care of clients. And those clients are doing the right job by finding licensed people that have knowledge in the field and are overseen by the state. A lot of those areas, people don't do that. They just there's people that are out there that actually practice without a license. It's dangerous. It's bad to the public. And this is further going to exacerbate that problem. When I spoke about the accounting issues earlier, I should bring up the recovery fund question that was raised today. The recovery fund is currently $55 every licensing cycle. The Alaska statute mandates that fund stay between $250,000 and $500,000. That statute's still in place, so the Real Estate Commission had to increase it. However, the reasoning behind the increase is what's important here. The numbers that were supplied, and I will admit they were very bad while I was on the commission, but we had to rely on something, indicated no fee increases were required certain years, maybe they should drop certain years. The numbers were horribly flawed. That flaw came out over the last cycle, and that is why the Real Estate Commission was forced to increase those fees from 55 up to the legislative maximum of 125. That should never have happened, and that points to the accounting problems that we had earlier. Again, I hate to beat up on the accounting issues too much because I know that there are some positive things taking place right now, but certainly not enough to ignore what has happened in the past and allow this increase to go through. And the increase in investigative fees, there were some good arguments earlier. But keep in mind, and it was also mentioned, that a lot of those came from the increase in activity during the boom cycle and during that period of time when everybody's trying to get into the business and everybody wanted to buy in. And there's a lot of frustration going on there then. That was further exacerbated by the market flattening out. And as I said earlier, people are pretty upset when they don't see the market going up. And that period's over, and I expect that we're going to see those cases drop. That is the balance of my testimony. Thank you very much for your time.
David, thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Is Ryan Danhauser in Fairbanks?
Yes. Yeah. Hi. This is Ryan. My name is Ryan Danhauser. I'm the current president of the Greater Fairbanks Board of Realtors and an associate broker for RE/MAX Associates of Fairbanks. I live at 3250 Adams Drive, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99709. I guess I don't know a whole lot about the entire state's licensee membership, but I can tell you about here in Fairbanks. We have about 98% of our licensees are realtor members, and we just recently had a realtor dues increase. And then in addition to that, there's the recovery fund increase, and then now this new proposed license increase. Plus, we have to have a state business license and a city business license if we do business in the city of Fairbanks. And then you couple that with our MLS dues and our desk fees. I think that what this is going to end up causing is a lot of licensees to just quit. The $275 to $685 is a 150% increase, but that also doesn't include the recovery fund increase that Dave Summers was just talking about. So, if you look at last year, we paid a total. If you add those things together, we paid a total of $310, and this year the proposed amount would be $810. The Greater Fairbanks Board of Realtors is definitely opposed to this. I wrote a letter myself, and a lot of our members did. And that's it for my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan, for your testimony. Appreciate it. Is Hank Bartos available in Fairbanks?
I am. I'm Hank Bartos, 3514 Hoona Lane, North Pole, Alaska, 99705. I speak in favor of the comments and letter from Jerry Royce. That is an accurate portrayal of what is happening in the real estate industry. I think that the members of the Finance Committee and Legislature should do an investigation into the real estate operation in the state of Alaska. I am one of the people that have been vilified by the investigative staff of the department. And I would make or not have any confidentiality involved in my case. I would like for it to be totally open to anyone that would like to look at it and make an assessment as to treatment that Hank Bartos has had by the real estate industry. I have been a broker for over 25 years and an associate broker and a company owner. I've owned Century 21 and Coldwell Banker. I have been a member of the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly for 16 years. I think that what needs to happen is the real estate industry needs to be separated from the current way it's done. We should be in a situation that we police ourselves similar to what the lawyers have as far as how they do their business. But I would like for anybody to contact me if you would like to hear what went on in my particular instance. Not one single consumer complaint was ever lodged against me. However, I was fined a tremendous amount of money. My legal bills were over $100,000 in fighting the state, which has unlimited resources. And it's hard for a person who has been wrongfully accused to fight the state with unlimited resources. I urge you to look into the situation, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate you testifying this afternoon. I'm going to bring, Hank Bartos. I'm going to come back to Anchorage now. Is Neil Thomas available to testify? Thank you, Neil.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I have a few extra copies of some prepared remarks that I'll summarize for the committee if you like.
Thank you.
What I started to do with this testimony, you need my address. I'm Neil Thomas, and I'm at 1521 West 15th Avenue, Anchorage, 99501. I'm an associate broker. I'm speaking just for myself. My license is hung at Coldwell Banker. And I began here by simply restating what you've heard already about the big increase in investigatory costs with the commission. And so I went looking to see what sort of things make up this investigative cost. And the logical place to do that is just go to the Real Estate Commission website or their other publications and see what they say about their caseload. It creates an interesting story because if you go there, you really don't find anything. There's a website that has a link called consumer information, and right below that is a link that says licensee disciplinary action. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe that'll be a report of what these cases are all about. What you get is a 5-page report that was last updated in April of 2010. It's got one paragraph case action summaries that go back to 2005, and the most recent summary case they have in there is a case from 2009. That's it as far as when going somewhere to find out what the Real Estate Commission's caseload is, which is being offered as the reason why this budget increase is necessary. They've got a few other resources on there for the consumer, and let's all recall that the real purpose of the Real Estate Commission is to protect the consumer. So some things they've done pretty well. They've got a matrix, for instance, there that you can pick up with a link, and it shows what all the different kind of offenses are, the things you can complain about, what statute it references, what the penalty will be. It's a very nice summary. If you remember the public and you had reason to question something that was happening to you in a real estate transaction, I think that's where you would go and you'd know whether you had a case. They've even got a separate link to another nicely done form that says, here's what the Real Estate Commission doesn't investigate. But if you were then intrigued enough to think that you should file a complaint, you then go and click on the link that says file a complaint online. And what you get is a one-page thing that comes back saying the online complaints page is temporarily disabled for an update. So they encourage you to write to the commission and get a form package or something to fill out and send in. So at least in terms of what I was looking for, which is an understanding of what the caseload is, I don't think you can get it. And so the questions I've heard so far today are well taken, and I certainly would encourage the committee. Representative Fairclough has asked that at a very early stage, and I think it's an appropriate question. You do kind of want to know what is a case with these folks. You might want to look at an alternative model. For the 2 years of the Hammond administration, I was executive director of the Human Rights Commission, and although that's not a regulated industry, it is really a case-oriented organization that is a department within a larger department. The Human Rights Commission operates out of the governor's office. And so you have a lot of the same kind of issues, and I'm sure accounting systems have changed and so forth, but what we dealt with then sounds familiar in what I'm hearing now in terms of overhead being assigned to a particular department and case management things. And so it's been a long time since I've been there, but I went to the Human Rights Commission website today, and I found a striking contrast. If you go there, it's very easy if you're a member of the public and you're curious about what the state of Alaska does in the way of handling discrimination cases, it's very easy to find it. There's all kinds of summaries there. You can figure out how much the commission is doing with employment discrimination as opposed to housing discrimination. You get a feeling for what their caseload is. There's nothing confidential in there. You're not going to see who's been preliminarily charged in something that hasn't gone public, but everything else is there. And if you were a member of the public and you wanted to know about discrimination issues and how the state is addressing it, you could find that. If you were an employer and you wanted to know what your rights and obligations were, you certainly could find that. It's all there. And so I guess I would urge the Real Estate Commission to do better. And I think there's a model there that you could look at. For instance, the Human Rights Commission statute empowers the agency itself to start an investigation. So there's two tracks. Somebody can come in and complain about something, I was discriminated against, but the agency itself can also start an investigation. Well, that's come in for some discussion here already today. The difference in the Human Rights Commission statute is AS 1880-100. Oh, I have a reference in here. 1880-100 sub B empowers the agency to start an investigation, but only the executive director can do it. I don't think there's a provision like that in the Real Estate Commission, and part of what we've been hearing today may simply be the fact that the statute doesn't really specify how an investigation starts or who's authorized to do it, and it could be something the legislature would want to look at. So I guess what I'm asking is that we ask the Real Estate Commission or task the Real Estate Commission with coming up with a case management system that has accountability and the benefits of public education. That's what the commission's all about in terms of protecting the public. Something us real estate licensees can look at. If I went and saw that the commission is taking official notice of certain kinds of conduct, and I think that's something I would want to know about. Gee, the commission's really taking after people for doing this, and gee, I know people that might be thinking of doing this, or I didn't even know they cared about that. So I think it has a well-managed case management system could also benefit the real estate licensees. And finally, and this is what I think I'm hearing around the table today, the legislature deserves this too. You're asking the right questions. What is the caseload? What is the nature of the problems that the caseload reveals? And therefore, how much of a problem is there, and what, if anything, we should be doing about it? Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil. We're all ears today. Thank you. Now I'd like to invite Don McKenzie to testify.
My name is Don McKenzie. I live at 3802 Richard Evelyn Byrd, Anchorage, 99517. I was licensed a long time ago. I think it was 1964 in another state. Virtually all I've done all my life has been in the real estate business. I'm the past president of the Anchorage Board, twice past president of the Alaska State Association. For the past 5 years, I've served as the secretary treasurer of the association. If it was the intent of the director to get the attention of the real estate industry, he has certainly succeeded. And I won't go over a lot of the stuff that was talked about earlier, but here's what I was struck with. We got almost $1.4 million in expenses for just a little over 2,000 agents. That's about $600, $700 per agent per year that it costs to administer this program. Okay? They've had less than 30 cases that resulted in any disciplinary action. Well, it appeared to me that the real estate industry is really being pretty well behaved. I don't know what disciplinary action means. A letter, revocation of license, suspension, I don't have that breakdown. But that's a little over $40,000 per case. I'd like to have that job. And I think the solution here is for this committee or somebody to take a real close look at the investigative process or the process that's being used by the division at the moment. Because by any standard that you want to measure, including the numbers that were presented from the director himself, it seems to be just very excessive. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony today. I wanted to just mention for those people listening online, we've got some people in Homer and other communities who are waiting patiently. So what I'm planning to do here is to take a few more people from Anchorage, and then we'll do a lap around the state. So thank you for your patience for those who are listening online. Now I'd like to invite Michelle De La Cruz to testify.
Hi, my name is Michelle Delacroce. My address is 1251 Surrey Circle, Anchorage. The reason I'm here today is because I am a new licensee. I got my license last year. I had to pay money to take a class. I had to pay money to take a test. I had to pay money to get a license, which then I was now qualified to not lose my license because I still didn't learn how to sell a house yet. Then I had to take and pay more money so I could learn how to sell a house. Now I'm up for renewal, and it's almost three times more than when I started. I've sold four houses, and I'm pretty excited about this, and I'm in this industry now because I choose to be. I came from accounting, which leads to my real concern. I sat in on the discussion Friday, and I sat here and I listened to the discussion again today. And what I keep hearing is, I'm not sure. I don't know. We don't know where the numbers are coming from. We're not sure how much expense is being allocated properly. I understand there's an RFP out for further investigation, but here we are discussing raising the fees before we know how it should actually be charged. And that concerns me a lot because of my background in accounting. God knows I wouldn't want that job, but I'm not ready to pay in advance in case we're coming up with a lot of expenses. Half of the cases that were opened did not result in a disciplinary action. Why is that? Why do we have all these cases that were closed without disciplinary action? Half. Who's paying for that? I guess I think that we need to finish the review process before we go into the raising the fee process. And that's pretty much it for me.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate you coming today.
Thanks.
Now in Anchorage, Waltron Barron, are you here? Would you like to testify? Okay, that sounds fair. Okay, thank you. Now I'd like to go to Homer. Is Angie Newby available to testify in Homer?
I am.
Okay, Angie, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. I am a licensed real estate broker here in Homer and have been in the business since 1983. I've been active in the state and local boards, and I'm speaking on as one of the members on behalf of the CatchMac Board of Realtors. First of all, I think that many of the professionals that have gone before me have addressed most of the issues that our local board has. What I want to say is that I really appreciate the response from the legislative committee and the response from our legislators in general, who have favorably called this particular meeting together and listened to our concerns. I feel very confident that once you receive the follow-up information from the Real Estate Commission, that everyone will come to the conclusion that this particular amount of increase is just unsustainable and unnecessary. I don't think that our organization is opposed to license fee increases, but they need to be reasonable and they need to be well supported. And I really, really appreciate the time and energy that everyone has put into this today. Thank you.
Thank you, Angie. Thank you for testifying today. Now I'd like to go to Sitka and ask if Nancy Davis is available to testify.
Yes, I am here. Can you
Nancy,
hear me?
Go ahead, please. Yes, we can hear you.
My name is Nancy Davis. My address is 2023 Halga Road. I'm the owner-broker of Davis Realty here in Sitka. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, 50-year resident of Sitka, and 13 years as a licensee and 30 years in residential lending. I do serve on the Real Estate Commission as vice chair, but I am speaking today as an individual. I am speaking against the fee increase from the $275 to $685. As a real estate broker, I believe in paying a reasonable, sustainable fee to support the real estate industry. I don't think any of the people that have testified today would disagree that we all believe that we should support our industry, but I do not believe that $685 plus all the other fees we are required to pay is reasonable. As many have spoken before, it will harm the real estate community, and it could be the tipping point for many of those that are on the edge. I would urge you to consider all the testimony and the public outcry and come back with three things: a revised reasonable fee, a transparent accounting of revenues and expenses on a regular basis, both to the Real Estate Commission and to the real estate community, and a solution for funding some of the deficit from funds other than just the licensees in this industry. I appreciate all the people that have come out to testify today, and I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you.
And just for those who are listening online, we have this is actually a budget subcommittee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Although the majority of the legislators here and also online are not members of the committee, so this issue has really drawn some attention. We also have in the room the deputy commissioner of the department and the division director, so we appreciate the attention that everyone's given to this issue, and I just wanted to highlight that. We also have Representative Munoz is in Juneau with some people there, and so I did want to mention that to those people who can't see us and know that your testimony is certainly being heard. So with that, I'd like to go to Palmer and see if Beth Freed is available.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. My name is Beth Freed. I am the broker for Valley Views Realty here in Palmer, and I am vehemently opposed to a increase to $685. My reasoning is that at first I was like, oh, an increase $300, no big deal, I can understand. But the more I delved into it and the less information that was available and all the information that I found as to commission committee minutes, commission investigations, nothing was ever very documented except the fact that both the audit and the commission minutes indicated that anyone in the division who thinks that they're dealing with a real estate issue can charge against the real estate budget, that anyone who is investigating an investigation and feels like they're not qualified to do it can pass that investigation on to another investigator. So you have two people working against our budget. And the audit for this year indicated that the administrative costs are not distributed equally across all of the licensed fields. There were 37 on one page, and some of them have boards and commissions, and some of them don't. And the whole division has me a little bit concerned just because there doesn't appear to be much accountability out there. And for one industry to receive such an incredible increase in fees based on a very poorly documented system, as far as I can tell, it's worrisome to me about the whole licensing, economic development, occupational licensing area. It needs to be investigated before you slam this on us, as far as I'm concerned. One of the things that was pointed out that last year's software conversion resulted in a bunch of closed cases being marked as open. And did we get charged for those things being researched? The other thing that was pointed out is that there's no good, the tracking system isn't adequate. Are we being charged for that to be brought up to adequacy? There are so many holes and so many problems pointed out in the documentation that it makes me a little bit upset that my taxpayer money, much less my licensing money, is not doing what it's supposed to do for the industry. I don't mind paying a licensing fee. I don't mind having a surety fund or an insurance. And I'm grateful that somebody's out there regulating what's going on, because I would hate to see what would happen to an unregulated real estate industry. My grandparents were in real estate, my parents were in real estate, and now I'm in real estate. And one of the biggest things my grandparents and parents loved was that the realtors started making sure that things were done ethically, that people were protected, that state government got involved in that kind of protection process. But now it feels like I'm being ripped off, and I'm not pleased with that. This is an industry that is part of a generational legacy, and you're hurting it very badly. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Beth. I appreciate you testifying today. Now I think I will go to Kathy Wedderburg. I'm not sure what community you're calling from, Kathy, but if you're listening and would like to testify, please let us know. Okay. Is Deborah Lisick online, and would you like to testify?
You had to step away.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did she step away? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, I'll come back to her. Helen Jara.
Hello. Excuse me. Hello. My name is Helen Jarrett. Helen Jarrett with RE/MAX Properties. I also come to you as the president of the State Association of Realtors. And my address is 4827 Blue Heron Circle, Anchorage, Alaska, 99507. And today I do come to speak to you in behalf of the Realtor Association. And many of the subjects that I had listed to talk to you have already been covered. So I just wanted to kind of restate that we are concerned about the accounting problems that have been arisen, and that we are also concerned with the possibility of loss of licensees over this, because of it has been a tighter economy in the past couple of years for our licensees, and an increase in this amount could affect quite a few. And then also, again, this sounds a little redundant, our concern about the investigation situation. And we would strongly recommend that all of this be reviewed and revised before raising the fee. So thank you.
Thank you, Helen. I appreciate you waiting patiently here in Anchorage. Art Clark.
Hello, my name is Art Clark. I'm the broker at Real Estate Brokers of Alaska and a member of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Association of Realtors. I'd like to state that it's a concern for everybody that has employed realtors that they're going to be paying a great deal more to have those people employed. It's going to be cumbersome on the industry. It's going to drive a lot of members that are on the edge out of the business. I think it's going to end up in a net decrease in total revenues for the Real Estate Commission rather than an increase. We are concerned about the accounting. We don't think there is an accounting, to be perfectly honest with you, and I think it's been demonstrated over the course of the testimony. So we'd like to see more accounting. We'd like to have just more oversight maybe by the legislature over the Real Estate Commission in particular, or not the commission. I think the commission is doing a good job, but the occupational licensing people and are just not doing quite what I think they should be doing.
Art, before you leave, do you mind giving us your address?
Oh, 7740 McHenry Circle, Anchorage, Alaska.
Great. Thank you very much. Patty Cohn. Denny Wood.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Denny Wood. My address is 11200 Polar Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99516. I've been in the real estate business for about 28 years. I'm an associate broker at Keller Williams Realty. I've also passed president of the Alaska Association of Realtors, the Anchorage Board, and the Alaska Certified Residential Specialist Chapter. And I'm an RPAC trustee at this time. I'm going to talk about something a little bit off the side here, basically showing a history of illogical thinking on the part of the department. I'm an educator, like Jerry Royce, and I teach a number of classes. I teach classes pretty much every week. And just recently, the department has increased the cost to get your license classes renewed to 200%, from $30 to $60 per hour. So an educator like me, and Jerry, or whatever, who teaches post-licensing, pre-licensing, CE education, has about 135 hours of classes that they have to renew every 2 years. That's $8,100. So that's a pretty substantial amount of money, considering, you know, we're fee instructors. We have to charge for our instruction, which obviously we're going to have to raise our prices. That is going to be a triple threat to the new licensees or getting their license renewed, because we're going to have to raise our prices too and pass that on. As it is right now, I've got to work about 2 or 3, possibly even 4 months teaching to pay for those fees now before I make a penny for myself. A few years ago, the Real Estate Commission and the industry as such was looking for more instructors. And the Real Estate Commission sanctioned a class, train-the-trainer class, which was full. And we gained a lot of new instructors. Well, instructors like myself and Jerry, I mean, we teach a lot of classes. We're going to have to suck it up and just pay the fee in order to stay in business. But these new instructors who are only teaching, you know, one or two or three or four classes every year are probably not going to pay to renew their classes. And we're going to lose a lot of great instruction because of that. All these classes are, might be off the side of things that the, you know, the instructors like us cover all the time that we are the general subjects. So we're going to lose a lot of good instruction there. Secondly, the I understand that the increased fee was partly because the surety fund was lacking. And a lot of that came from, again, what happened 2 years ago. We were all charged $91 for the surety fund, which is now the recovery fund. But we were all given a $61 refund because there was not a regulation in place that allowed the department to charge that $91 fee. So they had to run it back to the $30 that regulation was in place for. So another, you know, that's, I'm not sure that I might call that incompetence, charging a fee you weren't allowed to charge and then, you know, giving everybody a refund. Well, because of that, the Real Estate Commission started out lacking in those fees. Well, to charge the instructors an additional fee because of that lack, I think is a little bit illogical because we're the people training the licensees to do it right so they don't have a recovery fund fee or they don't, you know, have to be paid out on behalf of the recovery fund. So, again, that, to me, it looks like some illogical thinking on the department's side there. So, you know, speaking of all those things, you know, obviously I'm going to pay my fee. I'm going to get my classes renewed to keep teaching next year. But on the other side of that, the bottom line is all these fees and this added on to it, you know, we're going to have probably less and less and less people getting their license renewed. I suspect maybe 40% of the people won't renew their licenses because of this. And we're going to have an increased fee and end up having the same amount of money when everything's said and done. And now speaking, you know, for myself, I would love to have that fee reduced too to, you know, get my cost down for training so that I don't have to pay $8,100 to get all my classes renewed. But that is as it is. So anyway, thank you for allowing me to testify, and that's all I have.
Thank you, Danny. I appreciate you coming today to testify. Representative Faircloth.
Thank you. I have one quick question.
Sure.
Who challenged the state on the refund?
Challenged.
If the state, did the state do that on their own?
I have
or did
no
someone
clue where that came from. I just remember I got a letter in the mail with a note that says I was going to get a $61 refund, and I have no clue why it happened.
Thank
other
you.
Than the fact that, you know, there was not a regulation that said they could charge that.
Thank you very much. Jackie Pearson.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon. My name is Jackie Pearson. I'm a new licensee with RE/MAX Properties. My address is 1930 Rebel Ridge Drive, and I am speaking to you this afternoon from a new licensee's perspective. I've had my license less than a year, and it was very expensive to get. In between all the education, I just want to assure you that there are some classes and some subjects that I was taught three times and I was required to take three times within a year's period. Each time I had to pay for that class, and each time there was a specific amount of hours that had to be spent on each subject. So the education is there. My big concern is in starting up a new license, in a licensee starting up a new business, all the costs that are incurred. Not only is there the education, there are all the printed materials, the marketing, the advertising, the broker's costs, the licensing fees, the MLS costs, getting your reader key, and all of those other fees associated. Some of those were one-time fees, and some of those were renewable. With the increase, but my license was only for a year, so now a year later, I'm having to pay for a whole new license three times over what I had to pay last year. It makes it very hard to develop and to keep a new business in place. And especially my big concern that I found out that came to light this afternoon since I've been listening to everybody's testimony is the number of investigations that have been launched there doesn't seem to be a criteria and a procedure in place for those investigations. And for the majority of those investigations, the reprimand rate or whatever you're calling it is very low compared to the amount of cases that have been filed. It doesn't seem like there is a efficient way for people to launch an investigation online or mail something in. It seems to be very, very labor intensive. And I was particularly concerned when I heard the testimony by Jerry Royce with the, you know, the dichotomy between what the Division of Occupational Licensing is saying for their numbers and what he is coming up with. That is a very big concern for me, that it says that something is just not right. And so the bottom line is, it seems like there's a lot of disconnect here. It seems like there's a lot of streamlining that needs to be done and a lot of investigating that needs to be done. And for somebody like me who's just starting out, this is going to be very expensive to pay $800 plus when I only paid $200 last year. That's very expensive. And it's going to make it very tough for me to stay in business this year. I mean, I'm going to be able to do it, but there's going to be continuing real costs involved, and it just makes it very tough. So I, you know, encourage everybody to kind of take a look at where those expenses are, especially since there doesn't seem to be a lot of accounting, not only to the investigation process, but the general fund and some of the other funds costs that the Department of Occupational Licensing is claiming.
Thank you, Jackie. Is Kep Pierce available?
My name is Kat Pierce. I live at 2201 D Street, Anchorage, Alaska, 99503. And I'm one of the assistants, but nobody pays for my stuff. I pay it myself, and then I get paid on a sort of an hourly basis. I can do all of the things that a broker can do, except I don't sell very well. So, but all of these costs will still be mine. My income won't necessarily go up. I can't go sell another house if that's possible. What I will do is I will have all of these costs for taking classes, for my, you know, the fees from the state and so on, and although I will probably do this for at least one more round, just to see how it goes, I'm certainly not enthusiastic about it, and it certainly will not help my financial life at all.
Kep, thank you for coming today to testify, and I also appreciate you handing out the materials earlier. Me too. Is Brad Cole here?
Thank you. I'm Brad Cole. I'm from Wasilla, Alaska. I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Real Estate Commission. I am the chairman, have been for the last 3 years, so I'm sure I can answer some of the questions that you may have. For my address, I live at 5972 East Cumulus Circle in Wasilla. So I guess we could start off if you have any particular questions. I have a couple things I'd like to say to clarify some things that have been going on. You know, I'd like to piggyback on something that Representative Lynn said earlier. Everybody gets the idea that just because you sell real estate, you must be making a lot of money. You know, up until about 2003, 2004, that probably could have been true. But I can tell you today, in today's market, this is a poor man's business anymore. And $685 is a big nut to crack. I can give you, for an example, in Wasilla or in the Valley, our average realtor in the Valley sells less than 10 houses a year. If our average value in the property for a property in the Valley is $220,000, which it is, and he makes an average one-sided commission on that of 3%, he's making $6,600 per sale. Well, if he's only selling 10 houses a year, he's making $66,000 a year. Folks, with all the other costs that we have to pay, living expenses, taxes, the cost of being a realtor, he's not taking much money home. So it's a bigger deal than people realize. $685 is a big number. So that's why you see so many people sitting behind me that are concerned about this and are asking for your help. Some additional things I'd probably like to make a point of. I've been the commissioner or the chairman of the commission now for 3 years, and so I've seen a lot of these things come and go. I've seen three different directors. Each director obviously has their own ideas of how the business is to be run and what kind of transparency there is. I would like to give Mr. Habegger a kudo in the fact that he has been very cooperative with us, more so than in the past. We're still not where we would like to be, but he's only been on the position now for about 14 months, so we expect to see more. Some things that have been brought up, we talk about the real estate commission budget. If there is a budget, I have not seen one. Now, we were asked a few years ago or last year to do a better job of controlling our costs, and honestly, if you saw the handout that Mr. Habegger showed you, there's only three or four things there that we can control, and that is possibly how much work or overtime our immediate staff is doing and our travel and the cost of our meetings. Well, one of the things that we did, every quarter we have a meeting, and we've been flying around the state trying to get everybody involved so they could have an opportunity to come participate in the meetings, get additional credit for that. But obviously that was expensive. So we've now resorted to having all of our meetings in Anchorage, which has cut our costs considerably. The other thing that has happened is that for the first 3 years that I was commissioner, every meeting was a minimum of 2 days. We have cut that. We now meet 1 day. We meet through our lunch at times. We meet extra hours past 5 o'clock, but we've never had a meeting past 1 day for the last 2 years. So that's about all we can do to cut our budget as we know it in terms of a budget is concerned. It's concerning to us to talk about a budget and controlling it if we've never seen one. And we're business people. You know, when we sit down and talk about the different allocations, you know, we're business people. We know what it means to have a chart of accounts. We know what it means to allocate costs to different things, whether it be our marketing or advertising or whatever the case may be. But in this particular case, there's nothing there for us to review or to say have any say-so over. For several years, we have been begging for better information in terms of what costs are being allocated to us. We wanted clarity, we wanted transparency, and we have not gotten that. You can see that the meeting minutes that we've had, it's on record. In many cases, many quarterly meetings, we never had any financial results whatsoever, and so there was nothing to discuss. I guess the other thing I'd like to talk about is investigations. That's where the bulk of this cost is coming from and the increase. You've heard some disparaging things, and they probably need to be investigated as well. One of the concerns that we have had over the years is that there's an awful lot of cases that are being opened that, in fact, are frivolous. But the problem is we don't know it until a lot of money's been spent. And I'll give you a for example. A year ago, I was asked if I would review a case. I said, sure. You know, I was told that a lot of the information was confidential. I'd be careful what I related to anyone else. And but they wanted my opinion, should the case move forward? I said, sure, be happy to review that. I was mailed 6 2-inch binders of information that were letters, they were contracts, they were letters back and forth between the buyer, the seller, and what have you. It was appalling to me that we had gone to that length of investigating something, and then after the fact said, do you think this should have moved forward? Well, at that point, I don't think there's any choice. If you've spent that much time and that much effort on a case, and you've got that kind of history that stacks up into a tangible binder this thick, you've got to finish that investigation. In fact, the case probably didn't have any merit, and it shouldn't have gone as far as it did. I think that's another reason why we're seeing so many more cases today as well. You've heard a lot about the industry. We're not as good as we were a few years ago in terms of the amount of sales. And as long as realtors are busy, or anyone, as long as they're busy and they're making money, there's probably not going to be a lot of complaints. There's not going to be complaints from sellers, not going to be complaints from buyers. A lot of the complaints that you're seeing are between realtors, one broker to another. But because the business is so bad, everybody, we're all competitors here in this room. You know, we want as much business as we possibly can get. Be good about our competition, be fair, But there are times when people, if they don't have enough to do, they're going to make complaints, and they're going to file complaints. And so those are going to be investigated. Are they frivolous? Probably. But the problem is we don't know it until the money has been spent, and it's after the fact. We have made suggestions that a possible solution is when these things do come in, we obviously realize we do not oversee every complaint that happens. We can't do that. It's probably impossible for us as a group of seven people to oversee everything that comes in. But there are those that are clearly issues. There are those that are clearly black and white. But there are a lot of them that, because of interpretation of statute and because of interpretation of regulation, either side can have an advantage. Should they be investigated or should they not be investigated? What we have suggested is, realizing that we have to be careful about confidentiality, is that the chairman of the Real Estate Commission typically does not vote. The chairman conducts the meeting, makes sure everything is done properly. If there is a tie vote, he votes or she votes. But other than that, they don't vote. So we thought, as a solution, perhaps the chairman could be more involved in some of these cases to determine whether or not they were frivolous or not, and stop them before we start spending these big bucks. That has not happened. We have seen a little more participation on that side within the last year. We've had one meeting. In fact, it was the June meeting. The investigators came in. They brought a box full of investigations. We spent about 30 minutes going through those. We were warned that we were obviously talking about confidential situations. But we were able to go through about a dozen cases and say, yes, that has merit, or no, that doesn't have merit. We think that's pretty productive. We think that can save us big bucks. But to this point, there's been pushback on that because, again, because of the confidentiality issue. So that needs to be resolved in some way, that we can do a better job of that. The other concern is that Jerry Royce has some numbers. The state has some numbers, and we go, who's right? I think the fact that we have such a disparity between the numbers should throw up a huge red flag that something is wrong. And I don't know if Jerry's right. I don't know if the state's right. But there is a problem that needs to be resolved to decide who is correct or who isn't. So we need to get to the bottom of that. And if Jerry's right, we have a huge problem, folks, huge problem. So with that, I would be open to any questions you might have for my tenure as being the chairman of the Real Estate Commission for the last few years.
Representative Stoltz.
Yeah, thank you. And you're the second member of the commission, but you're the only one specifically testified on behalf of the commission.
That's correct. The other commissioner testified on behalf of herself.
My sphere, I have the Chugiak, Eagle River, the Palmer, and the Wasilla Chamber of Commerce. You can't swing a dead cat with hitting a lot of realtors. Not that I don't love cats. And realtors.
They're not the same.
Oh, no,
it is Halloween, yeah. So you can talk about cats and witches. And
your theme has been one that's been presented to me, is that by the time you realize what's been happening on investigation, it's long into the process and a lot of money has been expended. Ferret out the nature of them, some that are non-emergency and some that aren't, and did you do that internally within the board? And what are some of the pratfalls of what you wouldn't be able to do?
Here's what we did a couple years ago. We really foresaw that there were going to be problems developing in our industry because the level of business was starting to drop, and we know when people are very competitive, when we're starting to lose realtors because the business is not there, there's going to be issues between realtors. When sellers aren't getting what they think their property is worth, they're going to be complaining. When buyers think that they've got a great deal and find out a week or two later the same house may have sold for something less, they're going to start complaining. I mean, it creates issues just because of the nature of the business. But one of the things that we did a couple years ago is we asked the investigative organization, please track every phone call that comes in and tell us, what's the complaint about? Is it a representation issue? Is it misrepresentation? It had to do something with the trust fund? Was it because the realtor said the roof was good and, in fact, it's bad? What's the case? And so they did that for a couple years. We used that information for a couple of different reasons. One, we wanted to know what were the current issues that our realtors were facing, because it helped us establish what the required education was going to be. And the second thing was, hopefully we could help determine what are important issues in our industry that we need to take better action against. What are they in terms of frivolous or non-frivolous? We couldn't have answered that question. The other issue there with those calls is that a third of those calls had to do with the Landlord-Tenant Act for renters. We have no control over that, none whatsoever. But yet we had to spend all that time answering questions and trying to help those people, direct them to the right, and that's the work that the investigative organization is doing. So we need a better understanding somewhere, either through our website, through education or what have you, for people to understand that the Real Estate Commission has no control over renters and Landlord-Tenant Act.
I think only the property managers are under the licensing bill that Representative Roper passed over here.
True.
Invited the wolf to the door, appreciate that. I'd be anything that, whether it's you can, an investigator can't go on more than a certain amount of time without getting approval or.
We have no control over that whatsoever.
You like that type of control? I mean, that's.
Yes, we would, to a degree that we can control it. Again, we're seven people. We meet once a quarter. But there has to be better controls, I think. There's got to be something, either through a consumer advocacy group or something has got to be done. We've got to control that cost. Somebody made the comment, and I think this is very true. In a down market, if we have the opportunity, we will try to justify our jobs, and we will create work for ourselves.
Thank you.
Representative Keller.
Thanks for coming in, Brad.
My pleasure.
This is a sacrifice to leave our balmy beauty, you know, come into this big city.
Oh, it's okay. I enjoy it.
I've been under the impression that when a complaint was filed, that the complaint went to the Real Estate Commission. From what you're saying, I'm getting this unsettled feeling that you don't see them, you know, at all. I mean, I thought you were part of the review process at the front end, and this is probably just my ignorance, but I'm a little surprised. I mean, it sounds to me like when a complaint gets filed, it doesn't go to the commission, even though that's the way it looks on the website. You know, it goes to the division, and then you hear about it maybe later.
I don't think your understanding is any different than the general public. But no, we do not have any control over an investigation whatsoever. Now, the statute says that we have the right to ask for an investigation, but no, we do not control those. We don't see them. We don't know who makes the complaints. We don't know the number until we get a monthly report, but we have no control over that whatsoever.
I guess one question is, has the commission ever initiated an investigation? But then also, I'm really curious on why this is the case. Is it, do you think? Is it policy? Is it regulation? You know, you mentioned the confidentiality issue. You know, and I just want to know what establishes that. I mean, what is to prevent you from getting the an equal dose of the, you know, information when they first come in, and that you have some kind of an internal review process that parallels maybe what the department is doing. And I'm trying to learn. I'm not. I don't have.
Well, I think there's a little legitimate concern there. We do have to be concerned about confidentiality, and also remember that whatever action may be taken against the licensee, the Real Estate Commission members are going to vote on that. So if they know too much before the fact, it could taint how they react or what their opinion is. But like I said, we felt that maybe one solution of possibly others. Yeah, I don't think that there's any one cure-all for our problem here, but maybe one of them would have been to either bring in the commissioner, because, again, that person, the chairman, that person doesn't vote typically, or bring in one of the licensees who's a commissioner that works in this business every day and has a pretty good interpretation of what the law and the regulation is, and allow them the opportunity to say, yes, that is a legitimate complaint, or no, it's a frivolous complaint and should be further.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was just wondering if you think it would be more cost-effective to have the Real Estate Commission meet more often and review some of these cases to try to weed out some of the frivolous ones, and maybe there would be less investigative costs for the state in the long run if you did that way. What do you think about that?
Well, again, I think the issue there has to do with the confidentiality portion of that. I mean, it's frustrating not to be on the know on some of that stuff, because there's nothing more frustrating to us than to see a case that's been investigated for months and months and months, only then to be thrown out because there's no basis for the case. But for those cases that are realistic, we do have to be careful about that confidentiality. I mean, everybody wants a fair hearing. Absolutely.
Representative Wynn.
Yes, you referred earlier to money and income that realtors make, and you have a real estate deal, and you know the commission is often 6%,
mm-hmm.
and then the one office usually gets 3%. But if you are a salesperson within that office, depending on the commission schedule, you're probably only going to get something like 60% of that 3%. So That's correct.
Particularly with an office that has teams, you know, they operate under the premise that the team leader or the owner of the brokerage, or whatever the case may be, they're doing all the marketing and the advertising. So they have the upfront cost. And then they bring in other licensees that are either listing specialists, buyer specialists, or whatever the case may be. They work for the brokerage. They go out and sell a property, and then you're right. They may make up to, and probably 60% of whatever that selling side of the commission is, 60% is probably on the very high end. Typically, it's maybe half of it.
So it's even less.
Even less, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your good testimony.
Thank you.
Yeah, Brad, thank you very much for your testimony. Everyone who's come today has been so knowledgeable, and also I'm really impressed with it seems like everyone who's testifying is saying that I used to be the president of this group and that group. So the industry is very, you can tell that you're very involved in, you know, in your community and keeping it a healthy, vibrant industry. So I did want to ask you, you know, something that's come to mind because of all the expertise and ideas is that if we were to set up a task force to work with the administration to come up with some ideas on how to improve things because of all the experience, would you be willing to sit on that? And,
absolutely.
Okay. And I see Mr. Thayer shaking his head yes. So,
well, let me say something about the people in this room. You know, we all have good businesses, and by the fact that we're here, it's taking away from our opportunity to make money. But we also believe very strongly in our industry, and we're trying to give back and make sure that it is run properly, that the new people that you saw here today that have been licensed for less than a year, we want to make sure that they have a career like we have had. And so, yes, we are willing to give of our time to make sure that the business is being run properly, that the legislation, the regulations, and the laws are properly written. I can tell you it's not fun to sit down and try to write a regulation. You guys all know this. You've done it yourself, and you can sit and argue for hours over the meaning of is, but it's difficult. But we're all willing to do that to make it a better vocation.
And I do appreciate everyone coming this afternoon because we all realize that you have other things to do, and also I appreciate the members who are not on the subcommittee who've come too. We've had close to half, counting those of us here and people listening, half of the House of Representatives has been involved during some of this particular hearing today, which I think bodes well for the attention, plus the administration being here, the attention that we want to focus on coming out of this with some productive and constructive results. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we do have, I see six additional people who would like to testify, and my hope is that the meeting will end at 4, so I will call up those members who wish to testify, and if you want to perhaps keep your comments on the shorter side, that would be appreciated. Diane Steffen.
afternoon. My name's Diane Steffen, and I'm with REMAX Properties. My address is 5810 West Tree Drive, Anchorage 99507. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I also am a new licensee. It's 1 year. I'm at my 1 year point right now. And something that I've heard a couple of different testimonies. I'm sorry I wasn't here for the whole time. But if we make a 3% commission on one side, from that 3% commission, we also have to pay our broker, which depending on what company you're with, could be 30%. So then from that, the rest of that, then of course you have to set aside your taxes. So say you end up with maybe 45%, but out of those 45% that you have, you're still paying all your licensing fees, your classes, your, you know, whatever you need to run your business. So I'm saying 45%. I know I've heard 60. I've heard a couple of different things. So 45%, but that doesn't include any of our fees or classes or, you know, business cards or whatever to run the business. So just to clarify that. Also, I would like to see a budget, limitations on a budget, because how it's been explained to me, and forgive me if I am not understanding this correctly, but how it's been explained to me is that there's 55,000 licensees, and 2,500 of those are real estate licensees. So because we're not getting a breakdown of this, we don't really know. I know this has been said before, but we really don't know what part of that really should belong to us, which is a huge concern for me, because if I have a business plan, I'm running a business, you know, hoping to make a profit, but if I come into this huge debt I didn't know we had, and, you know, I have no way to comprehend how that's being allocated, 55,000 versus 2,500. So I know that, you know, they have asked for that in multiple ways. But also, to me, I feel from how it's been explained to me, it's like the state's been giving this open amount with no limit of what they can charge. You know, when I went in and looked, I was at the meeting also on Friday, and I looked at the personal services, for example, and I added up, they had them divided out, say it was like code 71,000. They had them divided out. Well, when I added them up, the breakdown didn't add up to the total amount. There was like $220,000 missing that wasn't even accounted for in the breakdown. So I'm thinking, I was just shocked. It's like I did it three times just to make sure I wasn't messing up the math. So I think, yes, we do need to go back and figure out what those, if those expenses are truly ours. Then another thing I wanted to say that I don't know if anybody's mentioned, say we're at the end of our year and, you know, since we're new, maybe some of us had been able to save, maybe some of us haven't been able to save, but if the fee goes up to $685 and for some reason we can't pay that, so we can't renew our license, now we have to either find a new way to make a living or we have to go back and take our tests all over again. So this is why I'm saying I think time is of the essence for this. You know, please don't just throw it out there and say, yeah, you're going to have to pay this. We're at the end of the year. And, you know, it's very difficult for us being new. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Diane. I appreciate your testimony. Laverne? Mary Ann Burke?
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Mary Ann Burke, and I live at 3818 Helvetian Drive here in Anchorage, 99508. I have two issues that I'd like to address. And in full disclosure, I am a member of the Real Estate Commission. I am a public member, and I have been on the commission since the March meeting of 2010. At my first meeting, trying to get up to speed as fast as possible, I asked the chief investigator who had the authority to open an investigation. And I was informed by him that they being the investigators, had the authority to open up investigations. It was not something the commission was involved in. He said, and then I later talked at the same meeting to the investigator that's assigned to the Real Estate Commission, who told me that any time they get a call they must open up a case by federal law. I ask for the citation for this because obviously it's not a federal issue. And I was told later, no, that that was just their policy, their internal policy. This was troublesome to me that an internal policy would require opening a case or a phone call without any triage whatsoever. I went to the actual legislation, to the statutes. My reading, and I am not an attorney, but I have read statutes for many, many years, was that the Real Estate Commission had the authority to open cases. And I went back to the chief investigator and asked him about this, and he said, no, you're wrong. And I said, well, since we do have this basic disagreement here, let's ask for the Attorney General to tell us. If there's a conflict in statute, obviously we need to get it corrected, but we need to have a clear directive from the legislature of who is responsible for this. To date, I have not gotten an answer. I have gotten a lot of polite nods and smiles, but no answer. As to the confidentiality issue, I'd like to bring my own personal experience in another role. I am a former director of the Division of Insurance, which, as you all know, license producers. In addition to that, they also have insurance companies from all over the world that are licensed in that process. As the director, I and only I had the authority to open an investigation. Well, how can you do that if there's confidentiality? Well, I think that's been blown totally and completely out of proportion. My investigator would come to me and tell me that he had heard and had reason to believe such and such was happening. A sketchy, no names, a sketchy description of what was going on. He then would ask me if I would authorize the investigation. I didn't always, because he couldn't always convince me that there was really enough reason to believe it was needed. But I would sign an order opening an investigation. Once the investigation was completed, if it was within, sometimes they were criminal, and of course that went straight to the DA and not to me. But if it was within my jurisdiction, the case came to me, the same person who had authorized the investigation in the first place. If I did not feel that I had the expertise, I would assign a hearing officer to it, someone within my division that was highly qualified. Or if it was really unique, I would get a hearing officer from the Department of Law to hear it. Those decisions were binding. I signed off on those decisions, and there was never, ever, in all the years I was there and the predecessors before me, we were never questioned as to confidentiality. We were responsible adults who understood our role and performed our duties. And I appreciate you for listening to me about this, but I was just getting more and more frustrated. Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne. Your testimony has been very valuable.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you also for your service. Chuck, are you available? Okay, thank you.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Representative Costello for holding this hearing. And I want to thank the other legislators who took the time to attend.
Anyway, my name is Chuck Boer. I live at 6224 Statham Drive. That's S-T-A-E-D-E-M Drive, Anchorage 99504. And I've been a licensed real estate broker for about 35 years. I've been involved in various aspects of real estate. First got my license about 2 years after statehood, so it shows you why I've got so much gray hair. Anyway, my first comment I want to make is that going back to the renewal of 2010, for some reason, the original surety fund fee was going to be $91. And according to my records, I got $36 back, so the net was $55, according to my records, for the surety fund then. My license was $275. So you take the $275 and add the $55 to it for the surety fund, it comes to a total of $330. Now, this year, if it continues like it is, we're going to be paying $685 for our license renewal, plus another $125 for the surety fund or recovery fund, which means a total of $810 just for those two items. So almost triple what it was 2 years ago. Okay, my next comment I want to make, and I hope I don't step on anybody's toes on this, but it seems like when you look at this budget, I don't know, it's not really a budget, it's this financial statement they gave out. Well, if you look at that, we're being kind of hampered in two different areas. First of all, is salaries. Salaries kind of went up from 06 to 07, 08, 09 in kind of a standard fashion, ranging increases from 16% a year to 9.6 to 5.1, except for this year. And this year, it jumped to 38%. It went up this year alone about $109,000. So that's a traumatic increase for just 1 year. Now, maybe it's because we hired somebody, which probably is the case. That's what's caused it. The other item where we're having, where we're being hampered is, again, which has been hampered all afternoon, is on contractual services, which is largely investigative fees and probably legal fees. And in order to do these, this analysis, what I did, I took the 06-07 fees and added those together as like one period of time, and I took 10 and 11 and added that together for one period of time. So I was comparing one renewal period to another renewal period. And the investigative fees or contractual services went up 121% over that three-term period. Now, my final comment is that, as you've been told, the real estate market's not good. And the people got to start paying $685 to renew their license, plus another $100 for the business license, plus all the other fees we have to pay. You're going to find, I think, a lot of people dropping out of business. And if that happens, that means 2 years from now, you're going to have even fewer people to spread the cost over, which means the cost will go up even more. So anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate your patience and also that you testified today. John Todd.
Chairwoman Costello, members of all the representatives here. My name is John Todd. My address is 13320 Crestview Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99506. Chuck Boer's been in business a year longer than I have. I've been a broker for 34 years and an agent, as they called him back in those days, for a couple of years, an associate broker for a couple of years. I'm going to make mine very short. I would say the same thing with the statistics that Chuck just said. You take the $138 out and have 10 years, you have an increase in our fees of 187% over the average of the last 10 years. I was going to talk about investigations. I think that was a big problem. It's been mentioned enough. The budget was another thing I was going to discuss. I think that's been discussed. I think history sort of says a little bit for itself. And I don't mind stepping on toes. Some people do. But I've known Jerry Royce since the early 80s, and his figures are usually pretty darn accurate. And the facts that I've seen that I've seen, and I would discuss some of these things that he discussed, but he has more of the facts on him than I do. And if they don't have the facts, I think he does. If you ask me to cut a budget, I would cut everybody's budget about 10% starting right now. And I think we would get rid of a lot of investigating people, and we'd be better off. So thank you very much.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you testifying today. I think I've got three people left, Laverne Pettiger. And then she'll be followed by Jeannie Webster. Jeannie's available. Okay, come on forward. Where are we? Yeah, if you'd like to testify.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeannie Webster. I'm with Four Seasons Real Estate. I am a 41-year salesman. I'm not a broker or an associate broker. I like being a salesman, and I do a wonderful job. I have to say that. My people tell me that anyway. I live at 7423 East 36th Avenue in Anchorage, Alaska, 99504. I'm going to cut it short because a lot of people have said the various things that we all would agree with back here. Jerry Royce has done a wonderful job. And so have many of these people that have been here. What I would like to ask about is when you do your fines, when the fines come through, if somebody's fined $5,000 or $10,000, does it go into the general fund or does it go into this commission's fund to help pay off costs? I don't know. And the other thing is when in court the prevailing party that wins the case, the one who doesn't win the case, usually pays the court costs. We have investigative costs, and my question is, do you include the cost when somebody has done wrong, that cost of investigative included in that fine, or is it just something that all of us have to wind up paying for? And I'd like to have that, and I'd also like to see the budget. Now, he did a 14-month budget that was presented at Friday's meeting, you know, and he was new, had not only been here 14 months, so he doesn't know everything that goes behind it. But I think we really need an accounting of what is happening with the funds and the cost of us and what it's costing us, because I believe that the cost of raising our cost of business is really quite large for everyone in tech. And then I'm going to close at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. If there's anyone else online who'd like to testify, please let me know. With that, I wanted to give Curtis Thayer an opportunity to come up and give brief remarks. If you have something you'd like to say on behalf of the division and administration.
Yes, my name is Curtis Thayer, Deputy Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to be here today. I appreciate everybody who took time out of their busy schedule to share their concerns. We value their input, and it's been very instructive to listen to. Ensuring Alaska is open for business is something we take very seriously at the Department of Commerce. We have worked hard to remove barriers for economic growth and to smooth the way entrepreneurship in Alaska. So we are very unhappy as anyone about the prospect of higher fees. We understand and are sympathetic to them. The potential burden that individual licenses may be facing with such increases, we consider it our obligation in the department to responsibly make doing business better, less cumbersome, and more profitable for the licensees. So increased license fees go against our grain, but we also have to have an obligation to operate within the bounds of Alaska statutes, which lay out a straightforward and reasonable means for determining fees. The department remains committed to working with the Real Estate Commission, as we did last week, and we will also be meeting with Jerry Royce and asking and looking at his concerns. Today's hearing was the first time it's been brought to the department's concerns. We'll meet with him at his earliest convenience, and we want to compare the numbers and see and make fully understand that we understand his point of view as well as he understands our the process that we went through in determining fees. One of the reasons that these fees took longer to do was because of the increase. It's not because it takes 3 months. It's the fact that we were concerned and we want to make sure the numbers were right and that we were incorporating all the costs. One of the things that people have brought up about the way the department has been running in the past, we had a new commissioner. I'm within 2 years in the department. Don's 14 months. A lot of the problems that you see in the past, those people are no longer working for the Department of Commerce. And I want to make that perfectly clear. When we talk about incompetence, we want to know about it, and we're going to address it, and we're going to take care of it. We talked about a surety fund and the fact that money was presented, and then it was taken back, and people got refunds. That person no longer works for the Department of Commerce. So that's one of the things. If there are abuses and there are things, we want to know about them so we can address them. But I want to thank you again for everybody's time. Again, we're an open book. We want to be proactive. We want to be transparent. We've been trying to do that for the last 15 months, and we hope to continue to do that, not only with this one industry, but the other 39 professional licenses that we also do. And with one thing also I would like to point out with our investigators, we have 18 investigators. We have 55,000 licensees. So not only do they do the real estate board, they do the nursing board, they do the medical board. So there's a lot of the 18, some of them are carrying caseloads of 70 and 80 cases. And so we have professionals there, and we are taking steps to see what type of tools they need to increase the effectiveness of what they're doing. So part of this is I appreciate the time here, but understand that we are trying to do things differently. And we will share, like I told you, we had an overview of investigations. Like I said, we got it on Friday. We'll be more than glad to share it with the legislature, too, because, again, it's a stepping stone. It's never been looked at, investigations. And I agree with some of the comments here. They open a cases, and sometimes they don't track the cases. They figure they open them, they're in the system, but some of these cases don't even warrant being opened. And those are some of the improvements we look to have in investigations. But I want to say thank you, and I want to thank everybody here in the audience for being here today.
Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can get the answer later, but the public might want to know. Are you going forward in the next budget built on the fee increase that we see here?
We're reviewing that now.
Thank you.
Representative Keller.
I just wanted to express my thanks to you, Madam Chair, for bringing this up. I mean, it's been very valuable with the number of contacts I've gotten, and I've learned a lot. But I also think I also want to thank Don, Director, for driving the nail. And not that it's my job to give the thanks, but I feel the gratitude there. And I also am grateful that the commission members are here. I serve on several commissions, and I would welcome this kind of a robust discussion. So thank you, Don. Appreciate it.
Representative Lynn.
Yes. Again, Manager, thank you for this hearing today. Very, very constructive. I guess the bottom line is this is one heck of a time to make such a horrendous fee increase. The legislature doesn't convene until the middle of January in a 90-day session. A lot of important things on the table, including oil and gas issues that are vital to all of us. So what do we do between now and January? Can we delay this fee increase until somebody has a chance to come reason together? Are we all going to be stuck with it during the holiday season? What can we do to delay this so we all come together and get some kind of a reasonable solution that can meet your needs and also keep real estate people in business?
At this point, the decision has not been made on what the fees will be because we're still reviewing the public comment. We have the input from this meeting here today. I think that we need to have that conversation with Mr. Royce also to see that his concerns are addressed and to see where we've missed anything. So I would say that I don't have a timeline necessarily, but I think between today's meeting, the closing of the public testimony, and some of the comments, we need to do as far as the administration needs to do a little bit more research with our people to make sure what the right fee number is and to make sure that we fully accounted for all the costs.
Yeah, thank you very much. Do your best. We need to stay in business. I had to make a personal budget, so does everybody in this room. He knew what's going on. The legislature needs to take action, need to be in session so we can actually do it.
And I wanted to take this opportunity to thank everyone who came today and took time out of your personal schedules to give us input, and for all the legislators who've been here listening, and also for the administration who's shown a willingness to open up a conversation and see this as an opportunity to make improvements for people who love Alaska. And with that, I'd like to adjourn the meeting.
Hidden in plain sight. So we need to reschedule you to depart here Wednesday morning. And gotcha. Sure. And I'll do that immediately. Of course not. That's what we're here for. Understood. And just so you know, I took the liberty of texting a message to Mia and Stoltz via Josh, and he gave them the note. So they're aware of it, that you had to go to the yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm disappointed more folks from Juneau didn't show up. We probably should have shaken the stick at them more to get out here, I guess, or made it impressed upon them why it was important to show up in numbers. But it was good hearing you send it at 403 and good testimony from Homer and Anchorage and Fairbanks. Than usual. That's no big deal. That absolutely. And we'll start heading on downstairs and taking care of it. I'm still up here in House Finance, just cleaning it up, and I'll soon be down in the office in about 2 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, good luck. Bye-bye.